and welcome to episode 14 of the Arcade Repair Tips Question and Answer Podcast. My name is Jonathan Leung, the producer, director, and editor of the Arcade Repair Tips video series. And joining me today, as always, is Mr. Arcade Repair Tips himself, Tim Peterson. Tim, how are you doing today?
Sweating.
It is hot here in Texas today on this July day here. Tim, I mean, this is probably one of the hottest days on record. It feels like it anyway.
Yeah, it feels like. I'm definitely glad we're doing this indoors today.
Oh, definitely. And you guys might have also noticed that there was a little bit different musical intro today. We wanted to try something a little bit different, so we kind of commissioned a guy to do a new intro for us, so hopefully you enjoy that. I like the chiptune stuff, Tim, and I think it sounds really cool. It's nice to have something unique, too, right?
Yeah. It sounds like an old school video game there.
That's right. So that's what we're going for with that. So hopefully you guys enjoy that. And, you know, just like I said, trying something different there. Now, we got a lot of questions, Tim, on this episode, and it looks like we've got quite a few. Now, we just got off the phone with some of the people who've asked some questions, and we'll get around to those here in a second, the voicemail questions that we received this week. And it's always cool to call up some of our people and to talk to people directly, you know, like we did this time, Tim, and I really enjoy that. It's fun. We couldn't get a hold of all of them, but we got a hold of as many as we could. So, but, you know, before we get into that, let's go ahead and check in with our progress updates from our previous shows, Tim. And our first one off is Chuck. Now, Chuck was the one who wrote us concerning the technical and cabinet how-to guides that we supposedly posted on Tim's Arcade Restoration. And he just wrote us back saying, "It sounds great. I just had a question about the ability to switch out monitor boards to a different monitor. Both the monitors are 25 inches. I wasn't sure about the interchangeability of monitor components. As a new arcade owner, I have learned a ton from your site. It is awesome. The videos are awesome, too. I guess I have one more question. I have a monitor where the width of the picture is too big. I tried the width coil, but it seems to just spin and spin. Any ideas? Thank you so much." So Chuck has a legitimate question here, Tim. It sounds like he's trying to get his monitor width adjusted, but it's not adjusting properly. What can Chuck do in order to get his monitor width adjusted?
Well, if his width coil is just spinning, that's a good indication that, you know, it normally would have a limit. In other words, so the fact that his is able to spin, that leads me to believe he may have a bad width coil. Go to Bob Roberts' site, tell him what monitor you have. He can get you the width coil, and usually they do a cap kit. Now, everybody knows when we say cap kits, most of the time we're talking about the electrolytics that are real standout. Anything you open, you say this capacitor, but capacitors take all forms and sizes. And the ones that usually, when we're talking about the width and stuff, aren't those type of caps that would normally come in a cap kit. Those type are the ones that, you know, I refer to them, they look like big chiclets.
Right.
They always make me want to put a quarter in and get some gum. But those kind that are turned kind of rectangular, a lot of them are orange or green or whatever, they'll be around that width coil in that area. Some of those you can tell if they're really bulged or big. Sometimes you need to replace those. And if you're just able to sit there and spin that width coil, we probably ought to replace that too.
Right, and that sounds like a good idea, Tim. And, I mean, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but aren't those known as propylene capacitors? I think that's the correct term. I'd have to really think about it, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah, propylene. So some of those, like Tim said, the chiclet style, the propylene type capacitors, you might have to replace those in order to get the width where you want it. I think that's what Tim's saying here, Chuck.
And then you have to understand the Tim terms here and the technical terms, guys. Sorry about that. Yeah, the other ones I call the smiley disc capacitors. You know, those are the ones that look like little smiley faces.
That's right.
little round ones. So you do have a lot of different types of capacitors. They just don't fail as bad. But normally when the width is failing like that, you will find some of those really bulged, and you can usually tell that.
Sure.
Just by looking at it.
Now, Chuck also had a different question in here, and it was concerning the interchangeability between monitor chassis, it sounds like. He has two 25s, and he's wondering to himself, can I change out those two 25-inch chassis? And, I mean, I guess the answer there, Tim, is if they're the same model, then yes, you can, correct?
Right. And even cross models sometimes. It won't hurt to Michael does this all the time. He'll just put one in, and he'll say, well, the picture won't look exactly right. You know, we often refer people to 8liners.com. I know Mark's been dealing with them some. They have a tutorial on how to read the impedance and all that stuff on there. Michael could probably be a little bit more technical. The simple truth is sometimes yes, sometimes no. It depends.
Sure.
And yeah. We really don't know.
But if it is the same model, it should work,
sure.
Correct?
Same model should go right in.
Right, but otherwise you're going to have to check some different settings on your monitor to see if it's going to be compatible.
Right. And more than likely it may not work.
Sure.
Especially if it's a medium res versus a standard res or something like that. So by all means, he needs to get the same models of one he had in there, if at all possible.
Sure. That sounds good. Well, hopefully that answers all of Chuck's questions. And we always, you know, we're always glad when people kind of write back to us, ask different questions after they've written to us before. So, you know, always feel free to write in, give us an update on what you guys are doing. So, and speaking of updates, here's one from Console Solutions. And this was with the Ikari Warriors that had the ROM issues. Well, it turned out that both the Console Solutions and the Reno guy were the exact same guy. We thought they were two different ones, but they're the same. And he writes to us saying, "Hey guys, I just listened to the podcast. I was clapping and jumping up and down when I heard my name. That is so cool. You guys are awesome. Okay, a bit of clarification. My name is Reno, and my business is consolesolutions.net. We repair and sell vintage video game systems and repair all the new stuff as well. So if you need something repaired, it sounds like Reno's got a nice business doing that. Just a few things on the Ikari Warriors machine. The ROM was probably bad on the original PCB that was in there, and the power supply was also bad. I had watched y'all's video on how to test a switching power supply, and it seemed to test fine, but then I noticed that when I adjusted the plus 5 volts, it would throw off the 12 volts way off. After further investigation, I read that the edge connector itself was reading about 7 to 8 volts. This was also causing the popping and the blue sparking in the tube of the monitor, because if I turned off the voltage pot on the power supply way down, the monitor would just glow orange as normal. So I replaced the power supply, got a replacement PCB, I figured I fried the other one with all that voltage, and just replaced both. I freaked my sleeping girlfriend out when it booted and worked. I was bouncing off the walls and yelling and screaming. I picked up the cab at a thrift store for $15, added a power supply and a new PCB, and now I have a fully working machine for about $100 total. Now to search for new broken arcade games to fix. Thanks again, guys, for putting me and my business name in the podcast. Thank you so much." So, Tim, it's always good when somebody's able to fix a problem. It sounds like he was having a problem with his power supply and his board. Like he said, it was, you know, the high voltage probably caused his board to blow up, you know, it sounds like.
Right, yeah, and that's why we often tell everybody you want to read your voltage at the board. I just want to interject here. It's not uncommon, and if you have a choice between either getting your 5 volts or your 12 volts correctly, get that 5 volts right.
Right.
If possible. Now, it's not uncommon for your 12 to drop down to about 11.5, 11.8. You hardly ever find one right at 12 and right at 5.
Right.
But if you're dropping down in that 10 range, that's a good sign that it's good time to go ahead and replace that power supply.
That sounds good, Tim. Okay, so we're always glad to hear about Console Solutions, and we're so glad that he was able to get his cabinet up and running. Hopefully he'll have luck with the rest of the cabinets as he moves forward. But Tim, let's go to another guy named Tim from one of our recent podcasts. He had a Neo Geo 4 slot with a jittery monitor, and he writes back to us saying, "Hey guys, thanks a lot for answering my question on the podcast. I figured I'd give you guys an update. The vertical hold of the monitor wire did pop off when I touched it again. I'm lucky to have my old wise father help me on this with the soldering. I noticed you guys set a Molex connector on the end of the wire. We stripped the wire, heated up the wire, and poked it through the hole. I don't know if this is the correct way to do it, but it did bring the monitor back to life again. Although, I still notice the same jittering every once in a while. The next step is to replace the pod." I think he means pot, actually. Potentiometer, yeah. Probably. "Where do you guys purchase or get your hands on one of these? Thanks again, and keep up the good work." So, Tim, obviously Tim sounds like he's still having a little bit of the jittery problem, even though he solved the majority of it. But it sounds like he's looking for a potentiometer now to go on his adjustment for that V-hold. Where all would you suggest that he go searching for that pod?
Well, you know, the first guy that we always recommend just for his service and knowledge and for just a downright good guy is Bob Roberts. You know, when you go to therealbobroberts.net, and I know that link is probably available, and if you do some research for the real Bob Roberts, not the fake one, of course.
That's right.
But we want to get hooked up with the real Bob Roberts. He will help you with that. And also Arcade Shop, a lot of people like that will probably have controls, probably carries it. Probably Bob Roberts will be my first choice.
Yeah.
You know, and then he does need to check out our video on Molex connectors. And he does, even though it worked, him putting it through the hole, he still needs to put a good connector on the end and make sure that that's wired safely. You wouldn't want that falling out during the game. And it probably could be some of the jittering. It's not always making a solid connection like it would be if you had the correct pin in there.
Yeah, it sounds good, Tim, yeah. But we always recommend, I think we said it multiple times here, that the real BobRoberts.net. Bob Roberts is one of the longtime arcade guys out there, has some great technical documents on his site, and of course you can get all your parts from him as well. So always going to recommend Bob Roberts for your parts needs. But, you know, check him out, Tim, and see if you can't get maybe that pot that you're looking for and get it replaced. So that vertical hold, you know, that jittering, you know, could very well be related to that. So Okay, let's move on to John. Now, John had written in Tim about a Neo Geo with about the top 1 inch where it was skewed off.
Right.
And he writes us back saying, thanks for the reply. I have capped the chassis board, but it didn't fix the problem. In fact, I believe it turned out not to be the monitor at all. I swapped in a different MB. He says MB motherboard, but, you know, probably board. And the picture is great. I've been advised that the Neo Geo's motherboards have had this type of problem. I'm going to replace a few caps on the motherboard to see if it clears up. I'll listen to the podcast, too. Regards, John. So, Tim, it sounded like his problem was not necessarily with his monitor, but actually with his board.
Right.
And, it, you know, skewed images, though, I mean, typically, I mean, if you just hear that, we would probably be thinking a monitor problem.
I probably recommended that he do the cap kit. One thing, though, guys, when we talk about a cap kit, it's not the end-all, cure-all to everything. It's a good starting point. If it's not his monitor, well, now his monitor is in a lot better condition and will last a lot longer, if he, especially if he intends on getting the game. But I'm glad that he was able to find that. That's all. Another thing that we talk about, you guys, with JAMA Games, was just on the phone with, I believe it was Rick earlier, and we were talking about, I said, you know, go to eBay, find a JAMA board, an old Cherry Master board or something, just to keep around so you can immediately say, okay, this is a board issue.
Right.
But I think he's on the right track. He did a great job, and I really appreciate him updating us and letting us know. I really want to know, John, once you replace these caps, I have not had much luck repairing those Neo Geo boards myself, so if some caps do it, please let us know. That would be a good thing to, a good place to start there for sure. Most of the time in the Neo Geo has always been in the connectors.
Right.
I mean, just old Nintendo kind of style connector, you know, just always wearing out. So I'd be interested to see if that helps, John. So thank you for letting us know. And so the next person runs across this cute image, let's by all means, let's keep those extra JAMA boards around so we can at least eliminate that.
Yeah, it sounds good. Yeah. You know, it's so hard to troubleshoot over the radio like this a lot of times because we're kind of guessing. You know, sometimes we don't even have video or picture to go by to see exactly what the problem is. And so we try to go by y'all's descriptions. And, you know, we're going to try to give you, like Tim said, obviously, you know, we recommend a lot of cap kits. But like Tim said, cap kit is not necessarily end-all be-all of everything. So hopefully, you know, that gets John's issue all resolved and he might even be able to fix that Neo Geo board up here in the future. So. Okay, let's move to Gary. Now, Gary had a Centipede, which he said had a bad monitor in it. I think we had some video and some pictures that he had sent us over. And he said, just wanted to follow up with the progress on my Centipede repair. I appreciate your response, but I'm an impatient person and had already ordered and installed the cap kit by the time you got back to me and still had the same issues. I just wanted to let you know that after doing the cap kit to no avail, I went back to Bob Roberts' website and came across the page on Big Blue. And, of course, talking about Big Blue, Tim, he was referring to the Big Blue capacitor in the bottom of the cabinet, correct?
Right. Some people call it the beer can capacitor. It's really big down in the bottom of your games.
Right.
It's bright blue.
Mm-hmm. And he continues to say, I figured a $12 part that I needed to be replaced anyway, what could it hurt? So I ordered it, installed it, and voila, problem solved. I had to do minor adjustments on the color and picture, but the Centipede game is as good as new. Look forward to my next podcast. I think I've found a new hobby. Thank you for your help, Gary. So Gary was able to fix it just by fixing some of the stuff down there by the Big Blue capacitor on the Centipede. And that's a common trouble spot in a Centipede, right, Tim?
Yeah, any of those Atari games like that, that era. In fact, let's just throw this out here from right now. If you got a Dig Dug, a Centipede, a Millipede, one of those games, and you're having some issues, while you order that cap kit, man, let's go ahead and replace that Big Blue. That's a wonderful suggestion and a great follow-up, Gary. Also, you notice he found this information on Bob Roberts' website. So when you guys are also going there to order your parts, man, read those articles and stuff. A lot of the information that I've learned and passing on to you, stuff I picked up just from reading and learning from him.
Yeah,
and
I think
from other people like that.
Yeah, I think there's a section called, what, Big Bear's Bulletin Board or something like that. And all that is all just technical documents and stuff that Bob's put together to help people out with their arcade repairs. And so, you know, our website's great. You know, we do the videos and everything. Bob Roberts has some great articles on his site, though, as well, that are going to cover a variety of topics that even we don't cover. So, you know, definitely take a look at that if you guys continue to have problems. So we're just glad, though, that Gary got his game back up and running, and we, you know, we wish him the best with his future projects. So, man, it sounds like we've got a lot of people fixing their games, Tim.
That's good.
And it's time to play them now, right? So that's good. It's always good to hear good repair stories. So. And we got one more update, though, from our previous podcast, and this one's from Adam, and he was having some problems with the Lethal Enforcers board. I believe this is the one that had the capacitor issue. And he goes, I'm still having an issue. I replaced the capacitor and soldered it to the board with the same result. I've attached a picture of the screen I'm getting. Again, thank you for the service you are doing for people. This is great. You guys are the man. You guys are the man. I guess we're singular. That's fine with me. And please let us know if you have any ideas. Thanks again. So Adam's still having problems with lethal enforcers. I believe he talked about that there was a capacitor with like some missing leg or that was broken off on his board. And we you know, obviously told him that he needs to replace that. But he replaced it. Still not working. So, Tim, he's probably going to have to go through his board and kind of do some checks, right?
Yeah. What you can do is here's a way, and let me throw this out. I'm not an expert on board repair. I'm lucky sometimes, but and there are some people, you may need to send this in to Electron Forge or somebody, look, do some research on some video game board repair. Maybe we'll even include some links on where you can. It's hard to find people that do this, honestly. What I've had luck doing, though, is if you'll follow the traces from your 5 and your 12 volts and where they go, and if you'll, like, that capacitor is right up near the top. That's really what I thought it was. You'll see if the voltage is going in one side, and if you've got, then follow the trace and see, follow that voltage. Michael, in fact, showed me how to, a lot of this was, you know, I'll put my ground over there, and then I'll follow that and see where I'm getting 5 volts before, and then where, I'm not getting 5 volts after this point or this part or this chip.
Right.
Well, guess what? Somewhere it failed in that stop, that stopping point, a lot of times is your problem. You can use what's called a freeze spray, and you can spray it on your board and see what chips are really getting warm, if that what dissipates that spray, in other words, really fast. Sometimes you can tell by feeling the heat on the boards. These are just some simple ways. I know that we could all get $4,000 to $5,000 worth of equipment and fix every board out there, but we don't always have that money. These are just some things that I've had some luck with in the past. Again, visual inspection. Go back around in that area. If that capacitor was to have shorted out or anything, a lot of times those resistors, those diodes and things in that area could be bad, and one resistor caused everything to do that. So, Adam, keep after it. I wish we could really pinpoint, be exactly where Michael could fix this board for you, too. So, you know, if you just get to that point where you're really frustrated. The problem with these boards, Jonathan, is a lot of times it's cheaper to buy another board than it is to get one repaired. It's just the amount of time that it takes to troubleshoot and repair one. You're going to spend $75 or $100, whereas you can go to eBay sometimes and buy one for $40.
Right.
And that's just from a monetary standpoint, what I would do. Buy me a working one and then keep working till I replaced almost every component. I can figure out, then I replace the other one. Then you can turn around and get your money back. Or right. You could keep a spare set if you wanted to.
Sure. And, Tim, I think, you know, we probably need to do a video. I think we have it on the list for inspecting an arcade board to talk about how to identify cold solder joints and cleaning the board and doing all that kind of stuff. Because, you know, a lot of times it seems like the problems that we run across, a lot of times are related to, like, a cold solder joint or something
you
like
know,
that.
You know, I have a game. It's a kiddie ride. And it has been giving me fits for about 6 months now. I talked to a tech the other day, and, you know, he asked me, he said, well, have you did all the cold solder joints? And I was thinking, this game ain't old enough to have cold solder joints. It's about 3 years old. And I thought, well, yes, it is. It really is. I took off the back of the game, and I noticed that some of the solder, you know, new solder is real bright and shiny, silver, you know. And then I noticed some of them were kind of brown and yellowing and stuff, and I retouched off all them, and that game is working like new. And, you know, of course, I asked them the advance to give me another board, and to repair that one was $260.
Wow.
So had I sent them that board, and there was one little trace I think I had to fix on it, I found it might not even needed it, but I did it anyway. So, you know, I saved my boss $260 for one, but it also fixed the game that day in probably about 10 minutes. So
sure.
If you ever notice, every time we work on a chassis or take Michael aboard for repair, he will get his soldering gun out and just start touching up all the soldering areas before he even turns it on or does anything to it, especially like on a monitor where the flyback and stuff is on the back. He'll always touch up those solder joints. He says it's that common.
Wow, okay. Well, sounds good to me, Tim. You know, I think we've seen a lot of cold solder joints, especially on monitor chassis, it seems like, and boards will have it as well. And I think, you know, it's just one of those things you need to check. And I think we should do this video on inspecting an arcade board and talk about how to identify that kind of stuff, how to clean it properly and all that. And I think you'll see it soon. Hopefully we'll do something like that. So Adam, hopefully you can try some of that, though. Look at the bottom of your board, just see if you can identify any trouble spots with the solder, and just see if you can touch those up a bit.
Another thing that I didn't say, Jonathan, if it is a cold solder joint, you can take your continuity test, especially if yours beeps, and you can sit there and go, well, it's going to here, check those traces from that 5-volt line. Follow that 5-volt line. You don't even need schematics, just a visual inspection. You know where the 5 volts comes in, turn that board upside down and trace where it goes. Make sure you got continuity throughout there, too, so that you don't. A lot of times that's how I find cold solder joints, when the continuity, or you're not getting a full beep. You're just kind of getting a little beep, beep, beep,
right.
Beep. You know, it's not quite solid. Then I'll put a little solder on there, and that'll make that difference.
Sounds good. So, Adam, hopefully you can take a look at those things and maybe get your board working. If not, I mean, obviously Michael has a Lethal Enforcers, right, Tim, that he could probably troubleshoot this.
Yeah, Michael's got a Lethal Enforcers if you send it to him. I know he could fix it for you.
Right. And you can always check out his website or email him at michael@tvrepaironline.com. And, you know, if you email him and tell him that you want to send your board in for repair, I can't imagine him turning you away, especially for something that he already has.
Yeah, you guys aren't going to find anybody more reasonable than Michael either. He'll do you right and take good care of your board, ship it to you and all that stuff.
Again, his email address is michael@tvrepaironline.com. So, you know, check him out, Adam, if you continue to have problems. Of course, you can always buy another Lethal Enforcers board, and, you know, there's nothing wrong with that. But hopefully we can get your game up and working for you. So, okay, Tim, we'll take a little break here. We're going to break between the two segments to talk just a second about our wonderful Facebook page that Mark, our community manager, runs. And I just want to encourage you guys to go to the Facebook page. You know, obviously it takes us a while to get around to all your questions, but Mark is always there to answer any questions you guys might have. He, you know, he's very dedicated to what he does. He's a great community manager for Arcade Repair Tips, and we really appreciate him. Plus, we have a contest going on right now, Tim, right?
Yeah.
So, well, you can win a copy of our soon-to-be-released Volume 2 DVD, and all you have to do is send in a picture of your before and after arcade restorations, and I believe that's going till the end of July.
Just another week away.
Right, we only have about a week or so for you guys to get those submissions in, but if you end up winning, me and Tim are going to, and Mark are all going to take a look at those, and whoever we think has had the best restoration, we're going to send you a Volume 2 DVD. So, you know, get your submissions in. You can send those to community@arcaderepairtips.com. That's Mark's email address. And he'll submit them. He'll put them up on the Facebook site. And you guys might be able to win a Volume 2 DVD even before they're released. But, Tim, we're looking at maybe releasing those for general sale sometime around the same time. So beginning of August, maybe middle of August or so. So, you know, look for those pretty soon. But we always encourage you to go to our Facebook page. Mark does an outstanding job there. And, you know, check it out, especially if you want to get together with other arcade collectors. So, okay, now we can move on to our website questions, Tim, now that I've put our little plug in there. Mm-hmm. And I will say that we've had quite a few voicemails after the last episode. I think I mentioned that we do try to call back people who leave voicemails, and we always love to do that. And so this time we actually got to talk to a couple of them. We called all of them, but only a couple of them actually picked up or called us back when we got there. So the first one we have is from Mike, and Mike just left us a voicemail concerning a Star Wars Trilogy arcade game. And so we'll go ahead and we'll play that now, and then we'll come back and give you our thoughts.
Hi, yes, my name is Mike, and I have a Star Wars Trilogy arcade game with the 50-inch monitor. Now, when I turn the game on, I put the quarters in, I get gameplay, lights and everything, but the monitor pretty much just kind of lights up and it's blue. There is no picture or anything. A friend of mine who works on computers says that basically it is a big computer and most likely there is an input issue from the monitor, or to the monitor, from the game board. Thank you.
So, Tim, we got Mike here, and he's got this Star Wars Trilogy arcade game with a 50-inch monitor, and it's obvious that he's not, you know, it's not working for him. But we were actually able to get Mike on the phone, correct?
Yes.
And we got to talk to him for a little bit. Now, Tim, after talking to Mike on the phone, what do you think the problem is with his Star Wars Trilogy?
Well, one thing that he noted is that he does not have the remote to that game. And Star Wars Trilogy, the big 50-inch monitor one, it's a TV in there. I'm thinking he may not have it on the correct input, just like if you know how it is now, everybody's got all kinds of devices hooked up to their TV. If you don't have it on the right input, you can't play games.
Right.
I think that's his issue. We're going to wait and hear back from him. He did check his connections and so forth. He's getting a blue screen, I told Mike, you guys with those big screen games, most time when your big screen goes out, you'll get just a couple little red lights on the side, or if it's a projection TV, it'll just be completely blank.
Right. But I think he described in the voicemail that he was just getting a blue screen, which sounds like it could just be on the wrong input, like you said.
Yeah, he has picture. I mean, he has game sound, play, all that, just a complete blue screen, which is kind of abnormal because it's a red, green, and blue guns. It's just acts to me like it's not getting the input from the game.
Right. So I think we suggested to Mike that he try to get the remote and see if he couldn't swap the video input source or see if he couldn't do that directly from the TV. Right, Tim?
Right.
So hopefully that'll solve Mike's problem. We got to talk to Mike. He's a real nice guy, and we were glad that we were able to help him troubleshoot that. So hopefully Mike will have luck with that. And I think we also gave him some numbers to call, the Sega Help Support line, as well as Moss Distributing.
If you guys are ever having an issue with a Sega game, I'll be honest, the people at Sega, or if you're not a big, huge operator, I call on behalf of 85 Games. You know, they tend to deal with me a little bit nicer on a company that owns, you know, 10,000 games. So, but I know sometimes they don't deal with the average Joe kind of very well, but Moss Distributing does. And if you call there, tech support, you can they're up in Iowa, Des Moines, Iowa, and if you do a web search, I'm sure you can, I believe it's MOSS distribution.com. Anyway, you can do a web search for that and get Moss Distributing. Rick and their tech support there is really good on Sega games, very helpful, and then you can get parts from them. You can't get parts straight from Sega.
Sure.
So you can get parts from Moss Distributing if you have a Sega game.
And I think that's good advice, Tim. And that's what we told Mike. So hopefully Mike will take the advice, call up, you know, Moss Distributing, see if he can't get some parts and things like that, or get the remote control for it, and then go from there. So hopefully Mike, that'll solve Mike's issue.
Worst case scenario, and somebody wants to do this, I can. There is a converter out now that you can get that you can put a big screen, put a plasma in there if you want, and do away with that big, you know, old gun tube thing that's
right,
in there.
Right.
You can get rid of that if you want to. Not the cheapest possibility, but hey, you know, if you want your game to look really awesome, you can put a big screen plasma or LCD in there.
Yeah, and I think I actually saw I want to say it was House of the Dead 4, where it had a big mm-hmm. screen in it, but they actually put a regular arcade monitor in it mm-hmm. afterwards, and it looked funny. Yeah. It was the funniest looking thing. It's like a little 25 where a 50 inch should be, and it looked right. like what they had done is built like a basically, you know, just a shelf to put it on, and then put, you know, kind of a black bezel around it.
Yeah.
But you know, I guess it worked. I mean, it just,
you know, one thing I didn't recommend. I think there is a VGA output on that board. I know there is in Wave Runner by Sega. He could hook up a computer monitor just to his board and see if there's the VGA plug on there.
Right.
Hook up a computer monitor. Just set one on the ground, plug it in, hook up the VGA to your game board, and if you saw Star Wars there, then you know that it's not your board.
Right.
Now, he still may not, if he still doesn't have his TV on the correct input, still not going to get a picture there, but he at least could eliminate the board by doing that. I have done that several times with any Sega big screen game.
Sounds good. Yeah, we didn't recommend that to Mike. So, if you're listening, you know, hopefully that's another method that you can go real quick just to make sure you're getting output from your board, right?
Right. Now, it's not, Jonathan, you can correct me here, it's not real common, though, that you would get you might have to go by a computer store to get a mail-to-mail or something. It's not usually like you would normally have.
Oh, okay. So is it like male on the back or female on the back of the board?
I'm not sure, but I know that any time I've ever had to do that, I've always had to go like to the computer store and buy it because it's never really been right. like a normal plug.
Yeah, I want to say that your typical computer is going to have a female on the back,
right.
So it might have a male is
it
what
might,
you're saying.
It might.
Okay.
Just check that. Remember that your normal plug may not work on there, but I know our computer place here carries them for like $7.
Yeah, like the little converter
you can
and
get
everything.
Them online. A radio shed might even.
Radio shed.
Cell phone shack.
Yeah, that's right. You know, I went in there the other day. They had some great deals on some like networking stuff and some crazy different stuff, but hardly had any more parts. It's just sad to go into Radio Shack anymore. I mean, I remember with the days when you could go in there, build an entire transistor radio, you know, from the parts that you had there, had little kits for all that kind of stuff, and now you go in there and it's cell phone wall to wall. So, but anyway, I'm off on a tangent, but hopefully if Mike's listening, that will get him heading in the right direction on his Star Wars. So, now we got another voicemail from Rick, and Rick had a couple of problems, one with a WrestleFest and one with a Gottlieb soccer pinball machine. So let's listen to that, Tim, real quick and give our thoughts on it.
Okay.
I have a couple of questions. My name is Rick Marola. I'm in Columbus, Ohio. I have a WrestleFest arcade cabinet that
worked fine probably 5 years ago when I set it down in the basement, just brought it back out to turn it back on again, will not come on. I don't see if any service in the Ohio area or someone that I can contact, but I'm looking for that. And then I also have a Gottlieb soccer pinball machine, and the cup that the falls into after you miss it has broken, and I wondered if it'd be possible to get that piece from you guys. Don't know if either of those are available or if you have any answers for me on the first question, but looking to do that. Thank you very much. You guys have a great day.
Okay, Tim, so we have Rick here. And the good thing about Rick was we were able to actually contact him, correct?
Yes.
Yeah, and I think we called him, and he called us back. We missed the call, but he called us back, and we actually got to talk to him. And so, Tim, he had the WrestleFest arcade cabinet, and I think in his voicemail, he actually said it wasn't coming on. But when we called him, he said it was coming on, but he was having some different issues with it.
Yeah,
what were those issues?
It would come up to, like, the start screen, but it was never going into gameplay and so forth. So one thing when, you know, we want to recommend, first thing, just about any problem, we want to make sure the voltage is right. So we have him, he's going to check his voltage and stuff and then get back to us. Could be a board issue. Also, he had a Gottlieb soccer game. It was from like the 70s. I believe it's a Gottlieb kicker. He's going to check it out and talk to Pinball Resources in Florida and try to get that part. So, and then his roommate had a game. We kind of went into a couple other issues. So We're going to kind of look to hearing back from Rick and see what all goes. But, you know, good place to start always, guys. Any kind of issues, let's make sure the voltage is right. Sometimes, you know, we talk about troubleshooting philosophy. If we don't know what's wrong, let's start with what's right.
Right.
If we do know, like we tell people all the time, the light's coming on, well, you know, the lights are AC. Well, let's look at the DC side. Is the coin lights work? You know, things like that will cue us into if we got our voltage right. So good place for him to start, and then we're going to go on into that board repair a little bit more if need be.
Sure. So we were able to talk to Rick, and Rick was a super nice guy, and I think he was in Ohio, Tim, when we talked to him. And, you know, we talked to him for a while and had a good time talking. You know, like I said, we love calling people and hearing from you guys. It's so easy for us to troubleshoot when we are able to get, you know, feedback from you. When we called Mike, he'd already tried several of the things that we suggested right up front, you know, even before we suggested them. If we would have emailed him, if he just would have sent in an email, we would have suggested those things, and he would have had to send us back another email to let us know that he had already done those. So being able to get that instant feedback like we were able to suggest things on the fly to him as we could. So we got Mike, we got Rick, we were able to talk to both of them, and it's been a really great day, Tim, just talking to some of our different listeners out there who are trying to fix some games. So, Rick, hopefully that fixes your problems. You know, power supply, like Tim said, a great place to start anytime you're having what you might think are either board issues or other issues as well, right?
Yes.
So, but hopefully that'll fix Rick up, and he can check out power supply on his WrestleFest and check out pbresource.com, Pinball Resource, for some of his Gottlieb soccer stuff. I think he said he had a broken part on there, correct? And
yes.
So, you know, hopefully he'll be able to get that part from them. So our next voicemail was from Sean, and let's go ahead and listen to that, Tim. I think he was just looking for a part, but we'll listen to it.
Yes, my name is Sean. I am looking for a power supply built by HAB, and the part number is 80-0002-10. And I was wondering if you guys know any place in Dallas that I can go and get one. Your website rocks. Thank you.
So, Tim, we got Sean. It sounds like he's in Dallas, and he was just looking for a part by HAP, and he had a part number with that. And he was just wondering if there's anywhere in Dallas he can get that part. Tim, you know, where would you suggest he goes if he already knows the HAP part number for a particular part? Where could he pick that up at in Dallas?
Yeah, well, there's a couple places. One of the quickest links I want to give him is go to texaspinball.com. Because the Pinball Festival is put on by a lot of people in the Dallas area. If you look at their exhibitors, one of them is Dallas or Discount Arcade, and that is discountarcade.com. They are in Dallas. They offer parts and stuff. Also, Cointech Amusements in Arlington. I believe they're still in the Six Flags Mall, if you can drop by there. I'm not sure. You know, when you say Dallas, man, it's like a country over there. You got all these different areas. So I'm not sure, Sean, what side of Dallas you're in. Also, he could contact Hyperspace Arcade. You know, it's maybe something that Scott could look at if he needs somebody to actually come out with that part and do it. You have Betson Imperial, who is a huge distributor, almost as big as HAP Controls. Betson's been around for years, and they are right there in Dallas. I think they're almost downtown in that area somewhere.
Right.
There's a lot of places in Dallas, but I would start with Discount Arcade, Betson Imperial, Cointech Amusements. Just those are some just people that we trust. H.A. France, F-R-A-N-T-Z, HAFrance.com. They are an authorized distributor in Dallas. They can help you. Boy, Dallas, I mean, there's plenty of places. You might just want to try to look at those, find one that's kind of near you. But anyway, any of those guys. And, of course, if you just can't find anybody, you let us know, and we'll try to help you out any way that we can. One thing that I would recommend is if you know the HAP controls number, you don't have to be a distributor to order from HAP.
Right.
Order from HAP. But he was probably looking somewhere where he could go and pick it up quickly. Guys, it's not, unless it's a really common part, they're probably going to order it from HAP too. So
right.
I'm just being honest that, you know, you can have it there in a couple days shipping. So, and shipping's usually not very expensive from HAP. They're out of Illinois. So I would just order it from HAP myself.
Sounds good. Yeah, well, like you said, Tim, I think he was probably looking for somewhere he could pick up that really quickly. And so those will hopefully give him some options for a place to
look at. Betson Imperial is going to be his best chance at just going down and getting it that day.
Sure. So, you know, check out Betson Imperial there, Sean, and see if that doesn't help you out. So, okay, Tim, now we have one more voicemail. It's from Cameron, and I believe it involves an NBA Jam machine he was having some issues with. So we'll listen to this final voicemail from Cameron, and then we'll try to troubleshoot his issue.
Hi, I've been working on a NBA Jam machine from 1993, and I replaced the switching power supply, and now I'm working on the isolation transformer because it's supposed to take 120 and put out 120, and right now it's taking 120 and putting out like 131, 129, somewhere between that, and I'm trying to figure out if that's what's causing the brand new switching power supply to be putting out weird voltages. The light doesn't come on, and then the positive 5 only puts out 1.79, and then the negative 5 puts out like negative 0.5 or something like that, and then it's got 130 coming in. So I'm just trying to figure out how to get that to 120 if that's what I'm needing to get the rest of the board going. Can't figure out exactly where it's gotten hung up from there. Anyway, yeah, so I'm just trying to figure out, it's a classic power supply thing, and it's I can't find the leads on the thing. It just looks like a big ball of tape in the center, and then the wires are just taped right into it. So, you know, I'm trying to figure out about replacing it or, you know, seeing if there's something I can change. It doesn't look too fixable, really, because it's all one thing. But anyway, yeah, I'm just trying to find a little bit more out about the classic style power supplies. Anyway.
Okay, Tim, so we have Cameron here, and he's got an NBA Jam, but it sounds like he's having a couple of AC voltage problems. And I don't know, for some reason, from the way it's sounding, it almost sounds like he's running his isolation transformer to his power supply. I mean, did you get that from the way he's saying it?
Yeah, it was almost confusing almost to read it to think. But, you know, that's okay, Cameron. Don't want you to get discouraged or anything. You're putting out a little bit too high AC. Your 5 volts is only putting out 1.79. There's a couple ways that, you know, we could go with this. If you'll go to Bob Roberts' site, he's got on there, I think it's like how to build an arcade game.
Right.
And it talks about how to start, you know, we start at the plug and go to the isolation transformer and to the power supply. You need to really look at that and make sure all that is correctly wired up.
Yeah, now, Tim, I will mention this, too. He says that he's got an old classic power supply in this NBA Jam, and NBA Jam's a jam a game. There's no reason he can't go switching. But one of the things is that he says it's like a big ball of tape down there in the center. It sounds like there's just wires going everywhere.
Yeah.
It might be good for him to buy one of those complete bottoms from Bob Roberts that already has everything in it.
$90 plus shipping, and he sells you the basic everything.
Right.
And he has his grandson that makes them up for him. They're real nice and neat. In fact, I'll tell you, Jonathan, we come across a big rat's nest like that again. It's just not even worth it, guys. This guy sends you the whole bottom of a cabinet with the wires, the jammer harness, everything already there.
Right.
You literally could be playing a game within 1 minute. I would definitely highly recommend that to him.
Yeah, because I mean, anytime
especially
you have
a, in that situation,
right? Anytime you have a rat's nest like that, you really don't know what's going on with your wiring. It sounds like he just really needs to take the time, trace down the wiring, and get a switcher in there at least, if not this whole bottom piece. I mean, if he's got an old classic power supply in there, I mean, it's not a good idea to run that on a newer style game anyway, if you can avoid it, right, Tim?
Yeah, we're calling this a newer game. It might be a classic
game. Well, NBA Jam, though. I mean, NBA Jam.
Yeah, it's definitely somebody converted something.
Exactly. It was a Defender, a Joust, a Centipede, a Miss Pac-Man. Something was converted to an NBA Jam is what it sounds like.
Right.
Because, I mean, all the NBA Jams, when they were released, Switchers were out, and they were probably designed to go more into, like, Dynamo cabinets, you know, that were already wired JAMA and all that kind of stuff, already had Switchers in it. But it sounds like an operator said, hey, I'll take my old Centipede that's not making money anymore, and we'll convert that over to an NBA Jam. We'll get it fresh, we'll get it new, and hopefully make some different money out of it, right?
Now, you can buy the parts individually from Bob Roberts, and he'll tell you how to do it. I'm just saying, for $90, it ain't worth it. You'll get a power supply, an isolation transformer, all the wiring, the fuses, the power cord, I'm pretty sure it comes with it, JAMA harness, and it's ready to sit down in your game and go. And
right.
You can just gut everything else pretty much.
Yeah, and this will really help him clean up his wiring. So hopefully Cameron will do something like that. It sounds like he's just going to have to take some time, rewire it correctly. And he mentioned something about the negative 5 volts, but I don't think you're going to be using the negative 5 volts really on NBA Jam. So you don't really have to worry about that too much. But the fact that his 5 volts was rating something like 1.8 or 1.79
yeah.
is pretty disturbing.
Yeah, so, he's definitely got some issues there.
Right. So, I mean, for all he knows, everything could be working except his power supply. He could have a good board. He could have a good monitor. But with the power supply like that, you're definitely not going to get any kind of gameplay.
If you're going to spend $40, give or take $5 or $10 here, on a power supply, let's just get the bottom of that whole game and get that wiring cleaned up and start over, you know, get a
right.
good
brand new isolation transformer, brand new switching power supply, you know, plug from the wall. This will guarantee that you get good power, right, Tim?
Right. That's the real BobRoberts.net. We love you, Bob. Thank you.
That's right. So, well, hopefully, Cameron, that answers your question. We weren't able to get a hold of Cameron on the phone, so hopefully if he calls back, we'll be able to give him some good advice. But, of course, he can always listen to this and get what we were going to say.
Just
anyway.
A note, Bob is not my grandpa or nothing. I mean, I just really think
we don't even
good.
Make any commission off anything that we refer people to Bob Roberts to. I mean, so
he's just that good a guy.
That's right.
From.
That's right. And I remember, man, remember all the Katrina stuff, and we couldn't get a hold of Bob there for a little yeah. bit. You remember that?
Yeah, I do.
That was scary, but he's there. He's ready to get your parts orders delivered to you, and you know, as he always says, no PayPal, no credit cards. You know, it's pretty much only check with Bob. So
right.
old school thinking. So, but we appreciate everything that he does for the community, and you know, hope that all you guys order your parts from.
And
him.
If you don't know what Langapi is, you will find out. We like the Langapi.
So, but anyway, hopefully that'll solve some of Cameron's issues, Tim. Now, let's move on to Robin. And Robin just had a little question concerning the classic power supply post that we have on our website. And he says, you say in the video that the AC comes into the transformer and DC out the other side, but I couldn't see any diodes. Are you sure this is right? AC in, AC out, then convert to DC elsewhere. And Tim, I don't know if you was mistaken which one was the power supply and which one was the transformer. And I think that might be the case here.
Could
you know,
be.
We mentioned in that video that there's one that's the power supply and one that's the transformer. The power supply does take in AC and puts out DC just like a switcher would, except
right.
it does it in a linear fashion, okay, which is what a classic power supply did. That's the way they did it before switchers came along. And then you have the isolation transformer, which is AC in, AC out.
Right.
But, you know, it just isolates the power going through there.
Right.
And so I don't know if she was talking about, you know, which one she was particularly talking about. But, I mean, we do know this is the way it works, right, Tim?
Yes. Probably what she's referring to is the isolation transformer. Normally it's a smaller one, but I have seen them be gigantic, and the power supply be really, they're crazy. Those old school power supplies, and a lot of times, you got to understand these guys fixing these games at that time. Today, if we have a power supply goes down, we could rob a computer power supply or something and put it in there and make it work if
right.
we had to.
Right.
What did they do? They were robbing them out of TVs and everywhere else, so some of them are really strange.
Right.
If you can't figure it out, wow, we're talking about a really good candidate again maybe for that complete unit, or at least you can go to Bob Roberts' site and maybe the pictures will help you more than anything, show you how stuff should be wired up into your game. He's got some really good diagrams and stuff there that I like to use.
Sure. So hopefully that answers Robin's question. I mean, there are two different pieces that we're looking there. One is a transformer, but the other one is a power supply.
Right.
And the power supply is what we're talking about, where the AC comes in and the DC comes out.
Correct.
So hopefully that answers Robin's question. And now we're going to move on to Todd. And Todd says, hey guys, I recently bought a police trainer game, a converted Primal Rage cabinet, for $50 at a swap meet. Always a good deal, right, Tim?
Yeah, we never seen a converted Primal Rage cabinet. Wow.
Yeah, that's, well, I mean, we've converted one. I remember we've...
I've seen a lot of them.
Yeah, we've done it a couple of times, but he says, that's right. I plan on converting it to a main cabinet, so for the most part, I was just buying it for the bear cabinet, and any usable parts would be gravy. When I got it home, I was able to get the police trainer game running, calibrate one of the guns, the other one didn't work, and played for a while. A few days later, the screen started getting blurry as it warmed up. I found a manual on the monitor and was able to figure out how to adjust the focus setting. Beside a slight green fading in the bottom corner, the monitor looked pretty darn good. However, a day later, the monitor stopped working. Now the game is playing blind. So to get to my question, I'm trying to figure out what to do if a main conversion is my ultimate goal. I could pay someone big money to remove the monitor. I don't think there are any reasonably priced repair services around San Francisco. I could check some of the easier and less dangerous fixes like loose wires and fuses. I could do my homework until I felt comfortable discharging the monitor myself. Ultimately, the choice will be, do I keep as much of the parts as possible and get a MAME to JANA conversion kit, or strip the cabinet out and start from scratch? If I do strip it out, how do I properly and safely dispose of the monitor? Any thoughts? Todd from Emeryville, and I assume that's in California.
Yeah.
So Todd is basically trying to go from a police trainer converted Primal Rage cabinet to a MAME system. Tim, I know that we always say that we would rather keep as much of the original parts as possible when trying to do any kind of conversion to MAME, because we like the feel of it. We like the fact that, you know, if you're going to put together a MAME system, we like an arcade monitor. And it's because you get the scan lines and everything that you would normally get from the real game. If you just have like a computer monitor in there, the picture looks too good. I think Tim has actually described this before, in the fact that it looks, you know, it almost looks so good it's kind of fake. And you can fake the scan lines and everything with software, but it just doesn't look as good as the original monitor. And that's my opinion. That's Tim's opinion. So, Todd, we're always going to kind of, you know, want you to go in a direction where you keep that arcade monitor in there and then get something like an arcade VGA and a JPEG to hook directly up to the JAMA harness that you have now. Now, Tim, is there anything that I'm missing out there, or anything else that you want to add to what I said?
No, he talks about, he obviously knows about the MAME to JAMA conversion.
Right.
And if, check your power supply, make sure your voltage is good. If your voltage is good and you truly have a monitor issue, in other words, the game, he says the game is playing blind.
Right.
What concerns me is he says the focus was bad and then it went out. That kind of sounds like his flyback could have went.
Right.
Because that's where your focus is attached to. And we don't always know everybody's money situations. If this was me, we charge generally about $70 to $100 for a pair of chassis. Well, and then it looks like brand new and probably will last as long as he has the game.
Right.
So if he can just remove that chassis, send it in for repair, there he goes. He doesn't have to change it. It's a lot easier to change that chassis out than it is to pull the whole monitor out.
It sounds like Todd, though, is a little scared about getting in there with our screwdriver and alligator clips. You know, a little scared with discharging a monitor.
It could be.
As something that was mentioned on the Facebook page, I think Seth had a little thing that he talked about where we were talking about the bloopers on our Volume 2 DVD, and he's like, does it have the blooper where you stuck the screwdriver up there for the first time and you scream like a girl when it popped?
Right.
And I think we all had that moment the very first time we did it, where we stuck that screwdriver up there and we heard that pow, and then, you know, it like started us so much. But Todd, I mean, here's the thing. If you're going to own an arcade game, you better get used to it.
Right.
And there's no time like the present to learn. You know, watch our video on safely discharging a monitor and make your alligator clips and get in there and do it. And, you know, That's the first step in order to getting your chassis repaired. Tim has a very good point. The fact that you're losing focus is probably indicative of a flyback issue, and it's probably what the problem is. You could replace that if you feel comfortable enough discharging the monitor, taking out the chassis, and soldering back on the flyback. It's not that difficult, right, Tim?
Right. And but even if you don't, you know, maybe we can put the shout out. There's got to be some other collectors in your area, or try a really old-school TV repair shop that's been around a while and talk to them and say, man, I need a chassis pull. I need you to repair it. It might not be as expensive as you think. Now, I'll be honest with you, though, to me, everything is expensive in California.
That's right. Yeah, for us, it is.
Yeah, I just, you know, I see those houses that are about half the size of mine going for like $500,000, and I'm thinking, wow, if I could move my whole house to California, I would, and sell it. But at the same time, keep us informed. If you do not feel comfortable with it, that's the way you're going to have to go. You could put an LCD in there and hook a PC straight up to it and bypass a lot of that stuff. But again, like Jonathan said, we're taking away a lot of the feel, what we like in the game to feel like and look like.
Right.
I can tell the difference in an arcade monitor and an LCD screen. They look awesome, but they also don't look like right. what I put quarters in.
And Mark Nellis, our community manager, had a great point about this, Tim. He mentioned something about, you know, there was a Dave & Buster's, I think a local Dave & Buster's there, where he lives in San Antonio or something, had a Galaga with an LCD monitor in it. Mm-hmm. And he told somebody, go take a look at that, and if you like it, then use that in your arcade games. But if you don't, don't.
Right.
You know, and I think that's the best way we can describe it. We can sit here and try to describe it to you, but you really need to see it for yourself to see whether or not you're going to like the LCD conversion or whether or not you want to stick with a normal arcade monitor.
Yeah. And I have heard people talk about putting this a PC monitor up in there. I will have to say, unless you really bezel it and make get one that's big enough, I ain't seen one yet that didn't look kind of crappy.
Yeah, and that's a good point.
What's that website where all the bad main games or something?
Yeah, I can't even remember. I'll have to look it up. Though there are some really good, really bad conversion, I should say. Some good examples of some bad conversions on that site.
If you're going to do it right. Do it at least make it look good. Whatever your choice is, make it something that looks decent and that you're proud of. Don't make it look like a computer sitting inside of a cabinet.
Right. Somebody on one of the things, I think they were watching our installing a fan video, and they mentioned something about how bad the wiring looked. And we did the wiring cleanup video on the Volume 1 DVD for that, but the reason that wiring looked so bad is because that came from eBay. Somebody bought that cabinet off eBay and had put a regular computer monitor in it, which looked terrible.
Right. Wasn't
and
then, ours, something we were fixing for somebody
exactly.
else.
That cabinet was actually something that we were fixing for somebody else. And the monitor was so hot up in there with that computer monitor in there that eventually the monitor just kind of fried. And so we put an arcade monitor in there with an open frame. All they did was take a regular computer monitor, painted it black, and then set it up in there. Right, Tim?
Yes.
And it was bad. And luckily, you know, this lady, we kept telling her she should buy from us if she wanted something like that, but she wanted something a little bit cheaper. And so she went to eBay, she bought this thing, the wiring was bad, the monitor was bad, it overheated, the way the computer was mounted in there, the battery went out, it was just a big mess for her. And we ended up doing a lot of work to it, Tim, in order to get it working. You remember that?
Yeah, it cost her more in the long run.
Right, so spend the money up front, get good parts. You know, if you're going to get an LCD, get one that's, you know, arcade grade. You know, get something that is that graded of monitor.
It should have a VGA plug on it.
Right.
In other words,
yeah.
You want that to be able to hook up straight to there. If you're going to make it easy on you.
Right.
Do it.
But Todd, we're going to encourage you to get your monitor fixed. I mean, even if it means taking it to a repair shop or getting a repair guy to come out to your house to take a look at it, you know, fix your arcade monitor. That would be our preference. But if you prefer the LCD, get you an LCD. So hopefully that answers Todd's question. We're not opposed at all to MAME conversions. We prefer not to do it to classic games. And obviously, Primal Rage is not a classic game by any stretch of the imagination, Tim.
Not to us.
Yeah, that's right. Somebody out there likes it. But
several people that like it.
Right. But to us, it's just another cabinet. You know, it's not like a Centipede or a Pac-Man. It just breaks my heart, Tim, to see like a Pac-Man that's got like a MAME conversion in it where they've horizontally mounted the monitor and everything. It looks bad. You know, if you're going to do it right. You know, either build your cabinet or get a cabinet that's already mounted the way you want and do it that way. So hopefully, Todd, that'll get you on the right path to getting your MAME set up all together. So, Tim, let's now move to Salvatore. And he writes to us saying, "Hi, I recently purchased an EA Madden Tournament Edition arcade machine. For some reason, the machine constantly reboots itself as soon as I start the game. I've had a new hard drive installed, and still the problem persists. I know it's not the CPU causing the problem. I was told that maybe the control panel might be causing a short. I disconnected each joystick to locate the short and still could not find it. Do you have any suggestions? Thanks for your time, Sal." So, Tim, I mean, obviously, you're more of the arcade expert here than I am, but just listening to what Salvatore says here sounds like a power supply issue.
Yep. He said the keyword EA. You got that game. It's like the Golden Tees and stuff.
Right.
And notorious for power supply issues. I have no idea why, but, man, I have replaced a lot of power supplies in them. So let's start there and check your voltages and stuff coming out of that power supply. It's going to look more like a computer style, probably. But if you're having that anything that's constantly rebooting, resetting, first thing I'm going to do is check the power and voltage. I really probably think that's a problem. I doubt it's a short up there. I doubt it.
Right. So he probably needs to just maybe turn it up just a hair, probably.
Yeah. Salvatore, if you can check that with a meter, or if you can't, even if you just move that up a little bit, see if move it to the direction the arrow will be pointing in, just go up a little bit and see if that takes care of it. If not, and you can check it with a meter and you can get the voltage right, I want you to write us back because I may have some other issues, some other things for you to try, but well, I'm going to try to keep this simple. I really think that's what this issue is.
Sure. So hopefully they answer Salvatore's question. I hope I'm saying that right, Tim. I always, you know, always get real particular about how people's names are said and everything like that. So hopefully that solves Sal's issue. Maybe I should just use it like that. So, okay, we got Timothy next. And Timothy says, okay, guys, first off, thank you for all the valuable information on your site. I appreciate your hard work. Because of you, I've decided to try my first repair on a good deal I got on a vintage Donkey Kong game. Keep in mind, it's my first go-around on video game repair. I've done some board-level PC repairs way back when. Can you point me in the right direction on this? I see a picture, and I have tried the common adjustment, holds, etc., and they do not work, and they work, but they do not adjust this issue. Everything else I hear seems to operate fine. If it's a cap, as per your video, it would be the horizontal, right? Because it's a vertical issue. So I should start there. If you can recommend a course of action, I would greatly appreciate it. I can't wait to get this gal all fixed up. Was my favorite when I was 11 years old. Thanks for, and please keep up the good work. So Tim, he doesn't really say exactly what his problem is, but it sounds like he might be having maybe some collapsing issues. You know, maybe like a vertical collapse, perhaps.
He's got a Donkey Kong, which is probably a Sanyo EZ chassis, which is, if you can ever repair one of those, you can repair anything. But they're really not as complicated as everybody makes them think.
Sure.
It's just a little bit harder to get the chassis out. And if we have to, we could shoot a video on that. Tim, yeah, getting a cap kit and starting there, man, cap kits solve a lot. And, you know, I really have been... try not to just say cap kit all the time.
Right.
I mean, I know it's kind of like our general fix, but it's a great place to start. And on Donkey Kongs, on those Sanyo monitors, I have seen it fix a ton of hula waving crazy issues, doing all kinds of collapsing and stuff. It really has fixed a lot of those issues. So really, you need to try to get that.
One thing that's good, though, Tim, is that he's saying he's hearing things, and, you know, so he's got some sound from the monitor, which means that probably that little board that's attached to the Sanyo Z is probably intact for the most part. He won't need to get the sound cap kit that you might have to get normally if you're not getting sound.
Right.
So at least that part is taken care of, but it sounds like he might be having some collapse or something. Obviously, a cap kit might help out here, and probably needs to check some cold solder joints around some of the chips and things like that as well to see if there's anything there going on.
I'll say this, just about anywhere there's a connector, reflow the solder on the back.
Yeah, and that's probably a good solution there too, Tim. So, you know, kind of check those areas. I mean, you know, like we said, you know, he's saying, you know, it probably would be in the horizontal section. You know, you can start there, but make sure you go ahead and take a look at the whole board. And there's going to be, you know, especially on a monitor this old, you're probably going to have some cold solder joints on there, I'd imagine. You know, there's going to be some breaking solder. And, you know, just do a visual inspection of your board. See, you know, if there's pins that are loose or anything like that, go ahead and refresh.
Well, if he's done some board-level PC repairs, he knows definitely what the cap kit's not going to be anything for him. So $10 and you probably have this game up and running. If not, your monitor will sure be in a lot better shape. I don't think it's going to be an IC issue based on just what he's describing. I'm looking at the picture. Nintendo games, really, cap kits solve a multitude of their issues. So let's start there.
Okay, sounds good. So hopefully, Timothy, that answers your question. He says it was his favorite game when he was 11. That's always awesome, you know, to be able to own something. You know, my favorite game was Street Fighter II. I've got one out in my garage now.
Right.
So, you know, it's one of those things to have those games that you remember. You know, Tim, we hold on so much to, like, our childhood. I don't know about everybody out there, but, you know, me and Tim hold on to, like, those childhood memories. And, you know, the arcade games, every time we step up to one, we play it, it kind of brings back a lot of that. So, Timothy, hopefully you can get this game up and running and relive some of those experiences you had when you were 11. Maybe even go for that Donkey Kong world record now that's owned.
Yeah.
I forget who owns that now. It's not Billy Mitchell anymore. Hey, it's some other guy.
Going back and forth. I think, yeah, we got a new guy.
That's right.
The newbie.
That's right. Check Twin Galaxies for more information on that. But hopefully that'll help you solve your issues, Timothy. And, you know, it's a great time to get familiar. You know, it sounds like this is your first repair. Great time for you to start and get familiar with some of that. So watch our video on taking out the chassis. You know, we do have a video on that.
Discharge the
monitor. Yes, and discharging the monitor. Mm-hmm. Safely discharging the monitor. Tim has a good point. So watch our videos on that and then go from there. That'll help you get it out of there. And then you can start with your cap kits and checking cold solder. So, okay, let's move on to Corey now, Tim. Corey says, hey guys, first off, I'd like to say thanks for your time and effort that you've put into the site, and especially the podcast and radio shows. I'm writing because I'm looking for someone somewhere that I could email in my two Electrohome Geo7 video boards to have them refurbished. Cab kit, flyback, etc. I've done some soldering and have access to quality soldering tools through my employer, but would rather pay someone with experience to carry out the job. One of these will go into a Sinistar Restore project that I will eventually sell. In this case, as a seller, I would feel more comfortable being able to say the monitor was worked on and performed by somebody else with experience. I found one site that offers this service, and he mentions ArcadeCup.com, Tim. Mm-hmm. But before I pursue other options, I want to check with you. That is, I appreciate your contributions to the arcade scene, and in turn, hope I can bring a little business your way, if you have time for it or if you want to do it. At any rate, if you can help with this, let me know what you need in terms of cost and procedure of going about this sending the boards off. Keep up the good work. I look forward to future podcast tips and info. Thanks, Corey. So, Tim, he mentions Arcade Cup, and we're actually very familiar with Arcade Cup, right, Tim?
Yeah, that would be chad@arcadecup.com. Very, very knowledgeable, very good at repairing, you know, any kind of chassis, some board repairs and stuff. We'll just shoot from straight from the hip. I think he's a little high. Michael does the same job for around $100 or less. So I'm looking at his site right now, Geo7. He's looking at $140.
Right
now,
through and now, does that include shipping and everything too, or
you know, I don't even know if that includes shipping. $110 to $140. Now, I will say this: Chad is pretty fast, and a lot of times he can send you out a board for you might get some exchange. I don't know; you can work that kind of stuff out with him. But, you know, Michael is just as good and a little cheaper.
Right. So, and again, if you want to write Michael, me and Tim really just don't have enough time for that kind of stuff. But when we do, we go to Michael's place to help him out with the repairs.
Right. All the equipment is now in Sulphur Springs, Texas, if any of you guys are near there. Or you can email Michael and get him to send it to you. What we'll do is we'll take a night, go up there, and spend some time with him, make sure everything's fixed, working, and ship it back to you.
Right. So, you know, you can always ship it off to Chad, like Tim said. We've actually used him in the past to fix some of our monitors. Mm-hmm. He's very reputable. But if you know, if you would want to go with Michael, you can do that as well. And again, we'll give out Michael's email address. That's michael@tvrepaironline.com. And you can just email him, tell him what you're looking for, and then hopefully he can set you up with a monitor repair. You know, obviously we want you to contact him before you send it. That way he can give you the address and everything to send it to, so... But Corey, yeah, I mean, if you want to send it off to Michael, that's fine. If you want to send it off to Chad, that's fine. Chad's probably going to be a little faster, but like Tim said, probably a little bit more expensive as well.
Yeah, and I think you're getting good repair either way. Now, having said that, you're still talking about $100 here, Jonathan. You know, for 30, you know, do it yourself. Being that you have been officially trained on Arcade Repair Tips for Repair Site, I think that qualifies you to save a little bit of money and do it and learn some things. And then I think you can get just as much for it. That I don't think you'll get any more for your game, in other words, if you're going to sell them.
Right.
I really don't know that somebody, maybe a certain, if they warranty it,
right,
or something, you know, I'm sure Michael and Chad both would warranty it, but not for very long. They're probably going to warranty it for like 90 days or so.
Sure.
So if you're going to sell it like the next week, it might help you. But at the same time, I think if you can get down and do the repair yourself, I think you'll get just as much for the game, maybe make a little more.
And let's go ahead and pitch our Volume 2 DVD while we're here. It does have videos on replacing the hot and replacing the flyback with Michael and Tim. So if you're interested in doing that, of course, you already have one on installing a cap kit. So between the three videos, you could pretty much do the work yourself, right, Tim?
That's correct.
So, you know, Corey, if you do want to ship it off, obviously Michael and Chad are both going to be very competent. But, you know, we also have a lot of confidence in your skill if you've been keeping up with the website. And, you know, you might even be able to do it yourself and maybe not consider it professional, but at least get it up and running and working. So, okay, let's move on to Tom now, Tim. Now, Tom says, I just picked up a one-slot Neo Geo in a Dynamo cabinet. When I get it home and plugged it in, the colors are all messed up. It looks like it was around some huge speakers. The left side of the screen is really red, center is normal, and the right side is really green. I've tried adjusting all the pots with no luck. Should I try to degauss? Thanks. So, Tom's having some color issues with his Neo Geo. Tim, obviously degaussing is the first thing we think about, but I'm actually thinking maybe more along the convergence rings, right?
It could be, or the fact that that's the same colors you get when the Neo Geo board isn't plugged in very good and doesn't look right either.
Right.
So really a couple things there. Make sure you're connecting to your Neo Geo board is good, really good. And then you can degauss it. Maybe a picture, if you could get us a picture of this. Left side's really red. The center is normal. Right side's green. Yeah, that kind of does sound like it could use that.
Right. Like degaussing, yeah. I mean, but usually degaussing is more like a subtle issue. The way he makes it sounds like there's three distinct areas where he's getting the color. And it almost sounds like the convergence is kind of like that gun shooting kind of off almost or
right.
something like
and,
that.
And I don't know if we shot a video on that yet, Jonathan. Maybe we'll put that in our click on setting the convergence rings. You just want to make sure that you mark where they are currently now with like a white paint pen
or a white pen.
Exactly. And then because if it's not that, you want to be able to get them back to where they were.
Right. But, I mean, we've seen this before with bleeding colors and stuff like that where, you know, it's like they'll be kind of all off in a certain section or something like that.
Yeah, you know what? The more I'm thinking about it, it does kind of sound like that. And, Tom, if you don't know what we're talking about where the chassis neck board plugs in, the little square board goes to the neck of the tube, right? Then behind that is a little piece of glass that you can usually see glowing orange. And behind that are these rings, and they actually spin and move. And all we're saying is that you can move them and try to adjust some of that and get your colors back in line. But another thing Tom could do, if he could get into the settings.
Right.
And
Neo Geos do have the video test mode.
And then you can move some of those and try to get them. But mark where they are now in case it's not the issue, in case you need to come back to where they are.
Right. Sounds good. But, I mean, obviously, you can try degaussing. You can try adjusting those. But it also could just be that he needs a cap kit or some repair done to it as well, correct?
Yeah, it's possible. The way it sounds, though, the way his middle of his screen looks good.
Right.
It is exactly what you're saying.
Right. So hopefully that'll help Tom out. There's a couple of things he can try. You know, let's try the degaussing coil. Let's try those convergence rings. And if that doesn't work, maybe move on to a cap kit or something like that. So hopefully that answers your question, Tom. Let's move on to Wayne. And Wayne says, hello, I've watched all of your YouTube videos, and I'm very impressed with the level of detail presented in each video. I am a complete novice at repairing arcade games and have a couple of questions regarding the Sanyo monitor in my Donkey Kong Jr. And here's the dreaded Sanyo 20 Easy monitor again. Tim, it strikes again.
Yeah.
So, I recently purchased this machine on Craigslist. I want to make it a JAMA standard game. I've already purchased the JAMA wiring harness, 60-in-1 JAMA board, and a new power supply. Currently, I have everything hooked up to my LCD flat-screen computer monitor, and it works great. But now, it's time to get the Sanyo monitor to work. Prior to degutting the game, everything worked fine except for some white vertical lines towards the top of the screen. The screen is set in a vertical chassis. I know by watching your videos that I most likely need to purchase a cap kit to fix this issue. Upon further research, I read the Sanyo monitors are set to negative video input instead of positive. What do I need to purchase to address this issue? Maybe a video inverter. If so, who makes them? I'm assuming the JAMA standard is positive. The Sanyo monitors run off 100 volt. Is there a way to convert that monitor to 115 standard? Basically, I'm trying to avoid two power cords coming out of the back of the game since everything else runs off 115. The marquee light has already been changed to 115 standard. I know that keeping my LCD monitor hooked up permanently is an easy solution, but I'd like to address the monitor issues and try to give the game and graphics more of a classic look. From what I've read, the Sanyo monitors appear to be more difficult to fix than others. Go figure. If I knew then what I know now, I would have purchased an arcade game with a more user-friendly setting. One of the things that sold me on the game was the zero burn-in on the tube. I do have experience with soldering, but not on the PCB. Any advice you could give to my questions would be greatly appreciated. Keep up the good work on your videos and website. Have a great day, Wayne Thomas. So, Tim, we got Wayne here. I mean, I don't want to tear up on Wayne too much, but he's tearing up the Donkey Kong Jr. to put in a MAME. I don't know what to say. Wayne, that's fine, okay? I mean, we would prefer you keep a classic, but if this is really what you want to do, it's obviously your game, so you can do it. Like you said, though, you've got a mountain of challenges. And it's kind of funny that you mentioned this because our friend Mark, who's a community manager, has actually been having problems with the 8-liner chassis that he bought, having to do with that positive and negative. And I believe that there was a schematic that 2Bit sent him or that was on the 2Bit's website that had a circuit that you could build that would convert negative to positive. Correct, Tim?
Yes.
Or you could get the video inverter, like you said. And you can either build that circuit yourself, or you could get a video inverter that's already built for that, correct?
Right. And I believe it's jamaboards.com has that inverter that you definitely need to get an inverter, or it's never going to work.
Right.
And we have done that before. And it's not hard. You're trying to put a Chevrolet in a Honda engine.
Right.
I mean, you're just... You know, you're just kind of...
Square pegging a round hole almost?
Yeah, I mean, you're really trying to do almost too much in my opinion.
Right.
That's my opinion, you know, Wayne, but if you're hard-headed and you want to do it, well, we're going to help you here, Wayne.
That's right.
Now, that's fine. Just know the obstacles that you are facing, because you're taking a game that was built in Japan and you're trying to do American things with it. Well, in order to do that, you are going to have to gut it. You are going to have to get an inverter. So you need to do some research on that. And
I'll see if
it's a JAMA board.
Yeah, I'll see if I can't get that link from Mark too on building the circuit.
If nothing else, he can go to Arcade Repair Tips Facebook page and ask Mark directly. Mark
right.
will tell him. He's kind of doing the same similar thing right now.
Right. He had it Centipede, I believe.
Yeah, he had an 8-liners board, and he wants to do that. So.
Right.
Definitely, yes, he needs an inverter board.
Right. So you can either build the circuit or buy the inverter board. Now, Tim, another thing that he's facing here is the 100 volts versus 115 on the monitor, which we faced in the past ourselves as well. And he's just asking, is there any way that he can get it to run off the standard 115?
Yes.
Okay.
It'll run, and that inverter board will – there's actually an inverter board for that too.
Right.
I don't know if they're one and the same. Honestly, as many people could use that same – here's an option. I really want to give them this option. A lot of people need those monitors that they cannot find anymore.
The Sanyo EZs.
The Sanyo EZs for their Donkey Kongs. I'd almost recommend finding somebody local and need one selling on that, or trading somebody for a standard.
For like a 4900 or something,
yeah, 4900
like that.
Or something, or, you know, a G07 or something. You might have some luck doing that. I'm not sure where Wayne is from, or selling it. Even
right.
on eBay, even with shipping, people will pay to have the monitor shipped, and you turn around and get one that's more suited for your game.
Or maybe even get one with a VGA plug already on it, depending on what he can get for his Sanyo EZ, correct?
True. That's really where I'm leaning. But just because you're taking something that don't really belong, let's give it to somebody who really needs that, because you really don't need it.
Right.
Is my point.
Right.
You
instead of trying to do the conversion,
else.
Right.
Yeah, instead of trying to do the conversion, give that monitor to somebody that can't use anything but that monitor.
Right.
Or without a lot of other work themselves. Save them and use some time, is my opinion.
Actually, I think that sounds like a very good thing to do, Tim. Like you said, there's too many people out there who need good Sanyo EZs. It sounds like this one might just need like one or two caps, and
sure.
it would be in perfect condition. So for Wayne, it's probably better for him to trade it off or to sell it and get him like a Wells Garner or an Electro Home G07 or something.
Go to auction and find a working game with a decent monitor and pull that monitor out, put it in, and then he's got a working EZ.
And here's another thing. He says it's currently working with his LCD flat screen. If he wanted to, he could leave that in there, sell the 20EZ out of there until he could find, kind of as a temporary replacement, until he could find a good deal on a regular standard arcade monitor that
sure.
takes the 115. So, I mean, that's an option too. I mean, you know, Wayne, those are kind of what you're looking at.
Let us know what you're going to do, Wayne, and we'll help you.
More. Right. Yeah, and those are kind of your options. I mean, yes, you will have to, you know, if you use that monitor, you are going to have to build that circuit or buy the video inverter. So, the way I see it is you might as well trade it out for something that's going to be 100% usable instead of something that you're really going to have to modify in order to get to work.
I would say somebody trade you straight up that needed
I think they
that.
Would.
Easily.
Yeah. Somebody who's listening right now might want to get in touch with Wayne.
Exactly.
If you want to get in touch with Wayne and you have something that you want to trade him for that Sanyo EZ, email us at questions@arcaderepairtips.com
right.
saying you want to trade with Wayne.
You know, it costs about $25 or less to ship a monitor.
Yeah.
Just pack it up good. You know, people are scared to death sometimes ship them. Well, how do you think they get to you originally? You know, they ship
That's
them, right? You know, I would just,
yeah.
one of you pay shipping there, another pay shipping there,
yeah.
and y'all try.
I mean, because if he changed that out with a 4900, he gets rid of the 115 versus 100 volt issue, and he gets rid of the positive sync issue. He can get
yes.
rid of both issues at the same time, save a lot of money, in my opinion, and maybe get traded straight up for it. And Tim, the more you mention this option, it sounds like the better it's going to be for Wayne to do that.
Right. Sometimes I just try to think of the simplest solutions, helping out another arcade collector that really would like to have that easy monitor that you can't buy anymore.
Right. So, Wayne, if you're listening, I think that might be a better way to do it. We'll see. If there's somebody out there listening, like I said, who has maybe a Wells Garner monitor or an Electro Home that's 100% working that wants to trade out with Wayne, you know, write us at questions@arcaderepairtips.com. We'll get you in touch with him. And maybe if you guys will just trade straight up, that will get Wayne – you know, going, and maybe it'll get, you know, a Donkey Kong or a Mario Brothers or something you have at your house going. So.
One thing I've always hoped that this website would do would open up things like that. In other words, sometimes I just really give some stupid bad advice. Somebody's run through that. Don't be afraid of, hey, Tim, that's not what mine was. It was a big blue capacitor down in there.
Right.
If you know these things, let's share this knowledge with everybody. you know, I don't want to be the guru of games. I just want to be able to help some people get their stuff fixed.
Right, and that's our whole goal here, obviously, is to fix the game and play the game. So hopefully, Wayne, that'll give you a direction to move in. If we hear from anybody, we'll send them your way. So, okay, let's move to E-Cruz, Tim. And E-Cruz says, hola, I'm looking to buy an old Galaga used arcade machine that is in a waiting room at a used car dealership. The owner said it was working, and then it stopped, and there's no video, and he thinks it might be the power supply, but the marquee lights up. What do you think could be wrong with it? He wants $200 for it. Is it a good deal? It's in really nice condition, and if so, what should I look for when I go to look at it again? Well, I hope to hear from you soon. I've seen a lot of your videos. Keep up the good work, sir. Thank you. E. Cruz. P.S., he says, I have an old power supply that came out of a Donkey Kong Jr. machine. Could I use that one in place of it if it's bad? Thanks. So, Tim, we got E. Cruz here. And it looks like he's looking for an old Galaga machine for $200. I think we're just going to go out on a limb here and say buy it regardless, right?
Yeah. I always tend to say that, I mean, it's a Galaga. You know,
right, exactly.
And depending on where you live, and if you live in a big Metroplex area that you might could run across or you can go to auctions, you can probably find a better deal eventually. But I don't know where E. Cruz is from. He starts off by hola, so, you know, we can guesstimate there. Maybe he may not even be in the United States.
Right. I don't know. That's pretty common in Texas.
Yeah, pretty common in Texas these days. I would check and see if you're not anywhere near
California.
An auction site. I would look in the back of the game, number one. Let's make sure that this guy is telling the truth, that all the parts are actually there.
Right. He is a used car dealer.
Right. Exactly.
I mean, you know how they are. So.
But at the same time, you know, if I saw one in the Tyler paper for $200, I probably wouldn't pay $200. I would offer him $100.
Oh, sure.
It doesn't work.
Right.
He can always turn you down.
Right.
He can always go up. But I would offer him $100 for it, because it doesn't come on.
That's the Dave Ramsey in you right there.
Yeah, exactly.
Go with $100 cash and be like, hey, here's 520s. Let's do it.
Throw 520s on the table and say, this is what I got. Now, that's just me. Because I always say this about buying non-working games. It could have a power supply that went out because the monitor blew up. It could have the board could have issues. Unless you know for sure it's just a power supply issue, expect that it may be more than a power supply issue.
Right. Assume that you might have to replace the monitor, the power supply, and the board.
Yeah.
And then guesstimate how much that's going to be to fix. And then when he says it's $200, you might say, well, it's going to cost me $400 or so to get this thing up and running, you know,
right,
or whatever it's going to cost me.
Right.
So you can kind of keep that in your mind.
Yeah.
So,
I don't think it's I think it's a fair price. I don't think it's a great deal.
Right.
And I'm borderline even if it's a good deal, because you don't know what else is wrong with it. Now, if I go, I'm going to take equipment, and I'm going to read the power supply, and I'm going, okay, it's a bad power supply.
Right.
Now, if you want to do that and take your multimeter and narrow it down to, okay, the power supply is not putting out the voltage, therefore nothing else can work, and you're still taking a guess even then, John, you know, if that's all that's wrong with it.
Right.
And I know that I can rebuild one for about $10. Now, I don't know what his level is and what he's going to need to do to get that running. Now, let's just say, if you're willing to put, say, $300 into this guy, a rough estimate here,
right,
and if it's just really bad, you know, some other issues, are you happy with it? Does it look, if you had that working 100%, does the outside look like it's worth $500?
Right.
I know people that would spend $500 on a nice-looking Galaga in a heartbeat.
Right.
I know other people just think that would be outrageous. But a fair price.
Right. So I think, and, you know, if he is telling the truth, I think it's a great idea what you said, Tim. Make sure he checks the inside.
Yeah.
The fact that the marquee lights up, obviously that's AC power.
Rats live inside and how many wires they chew through. Just you know, it doesn't hurt to ask. Can I at least look inside the game? Just be like buying a car that doesn't work. You at least want to make sure all the engine parts are there.
Right. So, you know, have him open it up, take a look at it. If everything is there, like Tim said, $200 is a very fair price. But keep in mind that you might have to put anywhere from $300 to $400 in it to get it to the point that you want it, just depending on how much you have to do to it. I mean, and then think to yourself, is it worth that? You know,
yeah, now to answer your 520s with you.
That's right. Now, the answer to your question about can you use your Donkey Kong Jr. power supply in it, I think Tim said no.
No.
Yeah, so you can't use that. You'll have to get you another one. Obviously, Arcade Shop sells that nice kit, switcher from the Classic Power Supply, the little kit that you can hook directly up.
Yeah, or you can get a rebuild kit from Bob Roberts if you can do soldering, less than $20.
Right.
You can rebuild that. I know some guys out there scream at me forever. That's like the world's best power supply to them, the one that's in there.
Right.
Even Bob Roberts himself says, why not rebuild it? Right. And he tells you how to do it and send you where, and it takes about 15 minutes, guys. It is one of the easiest things, if that's the problem, to fix. It's even way easier than a chassis.
Right.
It's right there. You take it out. You unsolder about three or four caps and voltage regulator and a couple other things, and you're done.
Right. So, E-Cruise, I mean, it sounds like you could rebuild it, though, even though your Donkey Kong Jr. won't work.
Yeah, do not put that one in there.
Yeah, you could rebuild the one that's in there. So, you know, obviously if it's there. So make sure that you take a look at the back of the game. And I think Tim gave you some good advice. So, you know, like Tim said, take 520s with you. See if you can't get it for that. Unless you really feel like it's worth $200. If you feel like it's worth that, you know, it's a fair price.
If the outside is in really pristine condition, you're not going to have to do any cosmetic work. You don't need to... If that control panel's in good shape, everyone I've ever seen is usually beat up and bad.
Right.
If the sticker on the bottom and the sides are good, yeah, I mean, that's all pretty expensive stuff to just by themselves, it's $200 to replace all that.
Right.
And the joystick and all that feels good. But when it doesn't come on, you don't know, I always back off because of the fact that it seems like 9 times out of 10, it's more than what we think.
Right. So hopefully that answers your question, and you can, you know, maybe you can get that for even a better deal. Make sure all the parts are there.
You don't want to put $1,000 into a game you could have bought in great shape for $700.
Right. No money pits, right?
Right.
So, okay, well, hopefully that answers E-Cruise's questions. Now let's move on to Seth. Now, this is Seth Shegel, the one that's from, I guess I'm saying that right, hopefully, Seth. Sorry about that if I'm not. But he's been on our community on the Facebook page quite a bit, Tim, and he actually writes us saying, I made a noob mistake. I bought a Ms. Pac-Man just from seeing the pictures online. So, well, you know, at least you saw the pictures online. One time, old Tim here bought a he traded. What did you trade? What was the trade? I forget.
Let's just go on for lack of time here.
I think I remember he thought he was trading for a Terminator 2 pinball machine, but it turned out to be a Terminator 2 arcade machine.
Pictures. At least you saw pictures.
So, but anyway, Seth, you saw the pictures online. The guy drove 1.5 hours, dropped it off. We plugged it in, and the problem started. Rather than telling him to pack it up, I figured I'd give it a good home.
Well, what you should have done at that time is saying, I can't pay you the full amount. I'll give you $50 less because of the issues, unless you can fix it right then.
Sure.
That's a little bit of experience talking to you. But
right.
Yeah, I don't blame you for not wanting him to pack it up. And you're still going to get this fixed, Seth. Don't sweat it.
Oh, yeah. So he says, the main one, it has a high-speed chip in it. I had a friend come over and drop a regular speed chip in it at the 6F position, and it still plays fast. We tried another chip and the same thing. It is an original board and daughter board. I looked on Lawnmower Man's site and can't find anything on the issue. Any ideas? The other issue is it plays Pac-Man sounds music. What do I replace to fix this? So he's got a Ms. Pac-Man, Tim. And no matter what he does, he's replacing the 6F chip. It's still fast. So, okay. And then the other thing is that it's playing Pac-Man sounds, not playing Ms. Pac-Man sounds. So what do you think's going on with Seth's Ms. Pac-Man here? He did check the Lawnmower Man site, which we always...
Yeah, that's where one of the things. But what you want to do is do a research on back to slow. I tell you what, let's email Bob Roberts. Tell him your issues. Tell him you need the sound chip for the Ms. Pac. Boy, I tell you what they do is, if he doesn't have the daughter card,
right,
it's going to play the Pac-Man stuff. So
right.
You need to make sure you have the daughter board. If not, you need somebody who can update the new chips. You can go to, I almost hate to recommend them, but you probably should go to 2Bits and ask them what's going on with it, and they can sell him the chip that eliminates the daughter card.
Right. Now, our good friend Pat Dennis, who was the guy that was always working with him? They had some of those 48-in-1 pack boards or something like that played the 48 different versions of Pac-Man that eliminated the daughter cards, right?
Right.
And, I mean, I know you might not want to do that, Seth, because it kind of takes the originality out of it as far as it being original, but that would solve maybe some of your issues with the daughter board. Tim's thinking that your daughter board's the one that's giving you some of the problems, especially with the sound issues, right?
Yes.
So the fact that it might not be hooked up, it sounds like...
Well, he probably has the sound ROMs for Pac-Man.
Right.
Tell you what, Seth, you know how to get in touch with me through Facebook, and I can hook you up with one of those kits for sure that will fix everything.
Right.
And they're $75 through me, and I can sell them to you. It will fix everything that you got and then some, and then some future stuff, and you can keep those other chips, and it'll allow you to play Pac-Man and Ms. Pac-Man if you want.
Right. So, but I mean, you could try that kit, Seth, or, you know, maybe, you know, like Tim said, go to 2Bits. 2Bits has a lot of stuff as far as, you know, Pac-Man, Miss Pac-Man stuff goes. So you could go there and see about getting the chips that you need to fix your particular
chip. Just tell Bob Roberts, I want to go back to slow.
Right.
And he will sell you the chips that you need to do that with. The reason why I'm saying the kit that I have, Jonathan, it plays Pac-Man fast and slow.
Right.
And Miss Pac-Man fast and Miss Pac-Man slow. And all that he can get and do himself for cheaper probably than he can have somebody repair this board.
Right. So, I mean, Seth, that's an option for you. But get in touch with Tim, and he can give you a couple of more options as far as getting some of those chips. You know, visit 2Bits or visit Bob Roberts' site as well. And
Lawnmower Man was a good place to start.
No, it's a great place. So, I mean, if you guys have Pac-Man issues, that's a great page to go to. I think that's right off CoinOp Space, right, Tim? You can go there and check out some of the different screens to see what the problem is, and they tell you exactly what to replace. Great site. Seth has a little extra info here, though, Tim, that we'll go on to cover. And he says, I ordered a complete pack wiring harness and AC power plant. My wire harness is hacked up bad. I don't think there's wire attached to the coin door. Plus, this will be a learning experience. Also, have you guys stenciled a Miss Pac? I'm going to take a stab at that, too. After this one, I will be a well-rounded arcade man. Just good enough to do some damage to them. Hope all is well, Seth. So, Tim, have you ever stenciled one? I mean, I know we... I don't think we have.
We haven't, but we definitely know somebody who has and sells the stencils.
Right.
Kevin is
That's
awesome.
Right.
If you guys were at the Texas Pinball Festival...
And you came by the booth.
Or you can go to the Texas Pinball site and see pictures of that Pac-Man that was there, and Miss Pac-Man, he made the stencils for those.
Yeah, the Stargate
and
was
beautiful,
sells
too. Them and can and talk for hours about just stenciling games.
And just the artwork.
If you want, we can hook you up with Kevin. Kevin can help him out a lot on his other issues, too. So
yeah, Kevin, I tell you what, the work that Kevin put into those things, I mean, they weren't just stenciled, Tim. They were... It was amazing what he did to those Pac-Man cabinets. It looked like, you know, people kept coming by and asking us, where can we buy the sticker to stick on our cabinet that looks like that? And Kevin's like, that ain't no sticker. But I painted all that on. And, I mean, he did just an absolutely fantastic job on those cabinets. Best looking Miss Pac-Mans and Pac-Mans Stargate that I've ever seen.
You get in touch with me, and I'll hook you up with Kevin, and you can see some of Kevin's personal pictures and stuff where he showed making those and everything.
Right.
It was awesome.
He's actually...
Kevin's probably listening.
Yeah, that's right.
How are you doing, Kevin?
He was on one of the lost episodes of the podcast that we did from Pinball Festival. Remember that, Tim? That it was just so noisy in there, we couldn't get a good recording with him. But he was actually on the podcast with us, and Kevin's a great guy. And like I said, his artwork that he did on those cabinets, it'll blow you away. So... get in contact with Tim there, Seth, about your ROM issues and with the stenciling, and we'll hook you up with Kevin and some other people as well. So.
Yeah, he says he doesn't think there's any wires attached to the coin door. If you need help with that, Seth, just, you know, you need to get your harness wiring diagrams and stuff out. But basically, you know, the only thing that goes up there is ground switch wires and your voltage to your light bulbs.
Right. Okay, so let's leave Seth for a moment. Let's go to Stu. And Stu says, I have what I believe to be an original Chex hockey game. And for those of you who don't know what the Chex is, I think it's the hockey game with the big dome over it that you see like at some arcades that has like handles on, I think, the ends. Not the sides, but the ends.
Kind of like foosball.
Yeah, kind of the opposite of foosball.
Mm-hmm.
But so that's Chex hockey. So Stu has a Chex hockey game. The game is working fine with no problems at all. I have made a few minor repairs, as in the gearboxes under the players, and replaced a few players themselves. Mostly everything was cosmetic. However, recently the game developed a major problem. Upon turning on the power switch, the game will attempt to start, but as the game plays, the theme music is all distorted and gargled. As soon as the intro ends, the game is locked. The scoreboard will display different lights on each time starting is attempted. The coin operations do nothing, not giving credits, and the boo buttons are dead. The game becomes essentially locked up or frozen. I have checked and double-checked the wiring inside the base of the game, making sure that all the wires and the harness appear to be connected. I've researched the game the best I can and found out about this machine has the Moog board, which is the original board that was used in these games in the 1980s. There is not much information on these boards, and the company no longer exists. It sounds almost as if the game has a possible short somewhere. Any idea would be greatly appreciated. Thank you in advance. By the way, great webpage, Stu. So, Tim, this is obviously not our area of expertise by any means. I mean, you know, I don't think either one of us have ever really messed with the Chex hockey.
No, but I tell you what, if we can find anybody up north, those games are so popular.
Oh, yeah.
You might talk to Mike'sArcade.com, one of those northern guys. But, again, if somebody brought me one, though, and they told me those issues, the first thing I would be checking would be the power supply, making sure that you're getting the correct voltage to that board.
Right.
Now, if that is the case, also flippers.com is in Canada, and I happen to know that he knows a lot about this game too, so I'm probably even... After you get past the voltage, I'm going to push you his direction. I think he might can repair that board for you if it is a board issue.
Sure. So, obviously, Stu, we're not the experts on these games by any means, but Tim's...
Not a lot of hockey here in Texas.
That's right.
Not
well,
a lot of hockey games.
We got Dallas Stars. I mean, we do have a professional hockey team, but, you know, but anyway. Yeah.
No,
but
they're okay.
They're in NHL. But hopefully, Stu, that'll give you a couple of places to check. MikeSurdK.com, I think Tim mentioned, and a couple other places. But, you know, check those out. They're probably going to be a lot more helpful than we are on this, especially considering that, like I said, neither me or Tim have seen a Czechs
really
hockey game.
Really talk to John at Flippers.com in Canada.
There you go.
I've seen some posts, I think, on his website about that game. And he may even have some tips. Just email and tell him what's going on. But I've checked the voltage first, and let's make sure, just like a video game, that's what it's doing. It acts like it's not getting the correct voltage, or you do have a board issue.
Sure. And, you know, especially with games that you roll a ball, like skee ball, or that you're moving a lot, you're going to have voltage issues, it seems like, right, Tim?
Yeah, they do, because of the movement, the vibration. They just get out of voltage.
Right.
Adjustment.
So, right. And so you're going to have that a lot more with games that are mechanical like that, or that involve like a lot of movement because of that. So, you know, always check the power supply on games like this. And Stu, try that and then get in touch with some of the guys at Flippers and Mike's Arcade, see if they can help you out. So, okay, let's move to Eric. Now, Eric says, hello, I recently found your website and I'm finding all of your info to be very helpful. I have a small question to ask. I just bought a used Daytona USA twin cab. One monitor works great, but the other one, the colors are all messed up. Enclosed are a few pictures of the monitor. Any help on what route I need to take would be greatly appreciated. Thanks, Eric. So, Tim, you know, I looked at the pictures a little bit, and it looks like he's having a couple of discoloration issues. Probably something that could be fixed maybe with a degaussing coil. But beyond a degaussing coil, what else can Eric do to fix some of those color issues?
Well, one thing great about a two-player game like that is he can swap the boards.
Right.
Let's at least eliminate what it's not. And also make sure that his voltage and all that stuff is good, as we talked about. But if it is, then he can recap his chassis and degauss it. Those will do wonders for that those types of issues. And it may just be some adjustments. Watch our video on how to adjust a monitor. You know, I'd be really interested in seeing him swap the boards and make sure that we're definitely dealing with a monitor issue.
Yeah. So, Eric, hopefully that answers your question. Check out our videos on degaussing.
Yeah, make sure that your game is unplugged before you do this, and then swap and then plug it back in. Sometimes doing that kind of stuff with the game on won't hurt it. Sometimes it just does a world of wrong things. So try not to do that with the game on.
Right. But, you know, we'd recommend that you check out our videos on adjusting an arcade monitor, using a degaussing coil, and, you know, just, you know, try those first. And also swap your boards out with the games off, turn them back on, and see if the problem replicates itself on the same unit with the board swap. So hopefully those will give you some ideas on where to start. So, okay, let's move to Kirk. Now, Kirk says, I recently acquired an almost mint Defender. For a month, the screen was excellent, but I never left it on for over an hour. I would always turn it off when it wasn't in use. Recently, I left it on for a few days straight and came home to find the monitor was black, but the rest of the machine was running fine. When I turn it on, I get a flash of white, then it goes black. When I turn it off, I get a circle of rainbow colors for about half a second. Any idea what is wrong here? Thank you in advance. So, Tim, it sounds like he's getting some power. I mean, what do you think? What do you think it is?
I think his hot went out on him.
And I was actually thinking the exact same thing. Probably that horizontal output transistor has probably kicked the bucket. And we'll go ahead and give another shout-out to our Volume 2 DVD, because there is a video on checking and replacing the hot if you guys want to see it. The hot, it's a little chip. It's usually attached to like a heat sink on your chassis. It has three legs on it. Our video shows you how to test it and how to replace it. But it's pretty easy, you know. But that's probably the part that's gone out on your monitor here, Kirk. You probably need to replace that. But if you do, you should get back in good shape, right, Tim?
Yeah, and let us know what kind of monitor you have, number one, and maybe we can help you. Or you can email Bob Roberts, tell him that you have a power issue. While you're in there working, it's a good time to go ahead and he was selling the hot caps and a flyback, but at least tell them you're having the power issue and that you need the parts to fix that, and you're going to probably go ahead and replace your flyback and your hot check. There could be a fuse on there, depending on what model. You didn't say what model it is.
Yeah, and while we're saying it is the hot, I mean, it might be a good idea, like Tim said, just go ahead and get the flyback in the cab kit too and do it all at once. You know, while you're in there doing a little bit of work on it, why not do it all? I mean, if you just want to replace the hot, you know, it's cheap. You know, you can get the hot by itself for pretty cheap. But a new flyback, new cab kit's not going to cost you that much more, right, Tim?
No, not too much.
So hopefully replacing the hot will answer your question. Again, if you need some more assistance on that, check out our Volume 2 DVD that will be coming out here at the beginning of August. So, okay, let's move on to Mike. Now, Mike says, hello, I am new to arcade cabinets, and I just bought a NFL Blitz 99 showcase cabinet today. The picture looked great when I first hooked it up. I turned it off because I forgot to hook up the audio. Then when I turned it back on, the screen was all scrambled. I was able to unscramble it a bit, but the horizontal and vertical will not hold. I have tried to adjust them with the switches in the back, but I cannot get the picture to stay. Would you suggest a cap kit to fix this issue, or is there something else I should try? I have posted some videos on the screen on YouTube. This is the best I can get the picture. I still don't know what kind of monitor it is in the cabinet, so I don't really know where to start. Looking forward to your input. So, Tim, he's got a showcase cabinet, so this is obviously probably something bigger than a 25-inch, something, you know, in the 33-inch realm or something like that as far as size goes. Did you get a chance to take a look at those videos, Tim?
I have not looked at them yet, but I know exactly what he's talking about from that showcase.
Yeah, it looks like he's getting a little bit of flipping here. I just booted one up just to kind of take a look at it for a sec, and it does look like he's getting quite a bit of just what we would call, like, scrolling effect, but it looks like it's happening this way. But it does almost look like sync almost, too. So, you know, Tim, what are you going to suggest here for Mike? What do you think he should do?
Well, you remember the last time we had one of these that did that? I don't think a cap kit will fix it, number one. Number two is that it definitely is something that horizontal and vertical. You got the vertical IC might would help. If it worked at all, I doubt it's just wiring because it was working.
Right.
It starts really getting kind of whack after that. Now, you can try the vertical IC chip on there will help him. Maybe replacing the pots. I doubt those are the issue, but then again, you know, this is actually one that I'm going to recommend that we did send ours off. We had one we just couldn't get. We did everything. I swear replaced everything on there, and Chad at ArcadeCup.com did fix that issue for us. Wasn't cheap, but it definitely was for that big a monitor. It was worth the repair. Now, he can pull the chassis and send it in, and definitely Michael could take a look at it. I really want to say that it was a lot of that vertical IC chip was doing that or just was not syncing up. Now, he can try. He says he tried to adjust them. Sometimes it's just keep on trying. You know, you might turn all the hole one way and the vertical the other way. You kind of have to work them two in conjunction with each other. But there is something on those big screens, that those really big ones, that if it's a Wells Gardner, Here's another thing we always forget to say this, Jonathan. If it's Wells Gardner, they're still in business and still very helpful.
Right.
I assume this probably is a Wells Gardner monitor by looking at it. I think that it could. I'm pretty sure it is a Wells Gardner by looking at it.
Oh, sure.
Talk to Wells Gardner and ask them, tell them what's going on. They may really be able to. I'm thinking it's like a resistor or something up near that thing. That is what Chad told me that fixed it. Just something that we normally don't look for.
Right. We don't deal with too many of the larger cabinets anymore either, just mainly because they're too big to move. Right. It's just a preference now. I think the biggest monitors we have in the shop are about a 25-inch now. You know, we tend not to mess with them as much, and they're a lot of trouble and everything, especially for moving them. But hopefully
I don't think that it's a cap kit will not probably do it.
Okay.
It won't hurt.
Right.
And always a okay place to start, but I really think it's going to be one of those chips. You can replace just about all those chips. When I say chips, guys, these are not what I normally think of as chips. They look more like transistors and stuff around the heat sinks on that without looking directly at his chassis. I can't tell him, but he can look those numbers up on Mouser.com or DigiKey.com and get those chips in. Try replacing those and see if that won't help you with your sync issue some.
Sure. So hopefully that'll help Mike out. Obviously, like Tim said, probably not a cap kit issue here, but, you know, you probably need to check around it's flipping this way, Tim, you know, like kind of like this. And so
it's just not in sync.
Right. It is a sync issue, it looks like.
Yeah, you can check that white sync wire coming back and make sure that it's making a good connection now. I mean, we don't want to rule out a wiring issue, but the fact he said it worked good and then it turned black and the screen was all scrambled and he kind of lost his sync.
Right.
I know that there's a chip on there that does something with that. emailing Michael might would help him too a little bit.
Right. So, I mean, there's a couple of options for you, Mike. Try those out and see.
I'm going to send this to Michael, in fact, Mike, and if I hear back from him, I'll let you know.
Okay. So we'll do that, Mike, and we'll get back to you and, you know, try some of the things Tim said, and we'll see if we can get you some more information as well. So, okay, Tim, let's move on to Baker. And Baker says, "Hey guys, first of all, I'd like to thank you for what you do. You have been a very reliable source for my arcade repair questions. With your help, I successfully brought my Moon Patrol back to life." Yay!
Great.
I always start a little celebration. I need like a little voice, or a little like thing, you know, that says something, you know, happy.
Like our studio audience.
That's right. Right now, it's just the cat sitting here. But anyway, the reason I'm writing this email is to inquire about my cocktail-style Frogger. It has been in great working order for the past 10 years until I moved it to my new house. And Tim, our famous last words, until I moved it, right?
Yeah, don't move again.
When I first powered it up at the new house, I was disappointed to discover that some of the sprites were garbled and that all the scrolling sprites, cars, snakes, logs, etc., were moving in a jerky manner instead of scrolling smoothly. In addition, there's no sound, but instead a faint hum from the speakers. I figured that perhaps the connection came loose inside during the move. So I checked all the wiring connections to make sure they were secure, and it did not solve the problem. I was also thinking that perhaps it could be a bad IC or EEPROM. I am not extremely knowledgeable in this field, so I'm not sure. Is there a way to determine if an IC or EEPROM is bad by looking at it or testing it with a meter? I am looking forward to hearing back from you guys again, and I appreciate what you do. Thanks, Baker." So, Tim, we got Baker here, has a Frogger, cocktail Frogger, and just was working, moved it, not working. So, obviously, you know, we always think if that's the case, it's something usually pretty simple, right?
Right. And he checked his wire connectors, which was a good deal to do. I would pay close attention where the harness plugs in. You know, it could have just been that time.
Right.
That's the hard part. You don't really know. So, we want to eliminate the simple things like, you know, did you push on those chips? Because that vibration of moving could have caused one of those not to be seated so good. So any that are socketed, we want to make sure we push them in really good. And if you can't, and if you want to, pull them out, clean them, and put them back in. But most of the time, it's just a simple push. And he asked if there's a way to determine IC or EEPROM is bad by testing with the multimeter. Well, in a way, yes. What you could do is get a TTNL cookbook, and you look up that chip, and it'll tell you what is the voltage. In other words, which legs have voltage.
Right.
And what you want to look at is the voltage going to them, to that chip, if it's fine, and then the next chip if you've got voltage there. Now, if the voltage doesn't go to the next chip, you might have voltage coming in but not voltage coming out. What you really need, and guys who want to start getting into board repair, you need a logic probe from like Radio Shack. I think you can still get them there. I know you can get them online. They're
right.
Not very expensive.
Right.
And what a logic probe does is you hook up to 5 volts somewhere on your board, and you push on each leg of that chip, and it tells you if it has like a long pulse, a short pulse, kind of like reading a Morse code or something with the
right
thing. And it makes noise. And based on those noises, it tells you, according to the TTNL cookbook, what that chip is supposed to be doing. If this leg or part of that chip is supposed to do a short pulse or a long pulse or whatever, and you can tell if that chip is doing what it's supposed to by that. So that's a tool that you would use more than a multimeter, but you could use a multimeter if you don't have this tool. But
sure.
It's a cheap tool. You guys ought to put it in your toolbox.
Logic probe. So, yeah. So, Baker, that's something that you could do. It's probably best just to press down all those chips. I'm going to go out on a limb and probably say you might want to check your power supply, too, just because, you know, in the move, we talked about moving games have problems with power supplies a lot. So you might check that as well. And like Tim said, if you really want to do a lot of on the board level side of things, you might also get you a logic probe and go through there as well.
Unplug the connector, going the main connector, you know, and the black one, you know, the long one.
Right.
And clean those with like a eraser or something and try that. It really sounds like you still have some kind of simple connection issue.
Right.
Let's go from there, though.
Yeah, hopefully that answers Baker's question, or at least gives him a couple things he can try here. So, you know, keep us updated. If you have any other issues or anything that you come across while doing that, let us know and we'll help you out. Okay, Gilbert's up next, Tim, and he says, "I stumbled on your site,
hey,
and it makes for
ironic.
Good rating." What?
I stumble on the site. We got something in common.
That's right. There you go. But he said, I stumbled up your site, and it makes for good reading. I recently started working on arcade games and have been self-teaching in the field as I go. I have been doing really well and keeping them going with repairs and such. I came upon an Arctic Thunder circa 2000 by Midway that has an issue that I have not yet been able to sort out. On the screen, the lower half has jumpy lines from the startup. Top half is wavy inconsistently, and eventually you can see a clear picture on the top half of the screen. Thinking this might be a computer problem, I did replace it with a brand new refurbished used one, and now I have the same problem. Any ideas? Did I give you enough information? Thank you for your time. Gilbert from Kannapolis, North Carolina, it sounds like.
Okay.
So, Gilbert, obviously, if you replace the computer, that's really indicative now of a monitor issue. And yeah. It really sounds like you're having some monitor issues.
Well, one way he can prove that is that computer has a VGA plug on it. Hook up a computer monitor to it and see if you're getting any of that on your computer monitor.
Sure.
If you're not getting any of that, then yes, you have a monitor issue. Then we're talking about it could be several things.
But just the fact that he hooked up both these different computers and he got the exact same thing.
True.
Probably means that he's fighting the monitor problem here, right? I mean, you know, so yeah, I think it is a monitor issue. Now, Tim, the question is, what's going to solve this on his monitor? What's going to solve the issue?
Well, the way it talks about jumpy and the top half being wavy and inconsistently, you know, that sounds almost like a cold solder joint.
Right.
Or it could be those convergence rings we talked about earlier, or just time to rebuild it. You know, just time to spend some time and going ahead and do a cap kit on it.
Now, Tim, what's the common monitor in an Arctic Thunder? I want to say it's something like a D9200.
Yeah, probably the D9200.
A Wells Garner D9200, yeah, by the way.
Which, like I said, we forget to mention this, Wells Garner has awesome tech support, and they will help you, home guys. You know, just because you're not a business, you can call up Wells Garner. You can go to wellsgarner.com, call their tech support line, and tell them what monitor model you have. Now, there is some settings. You can do like a factory restore on that D9200, and sometimes that solves a lot of issues. Digital monitors are really different, and they have some stuff that can be solved. I know that you can go into the menu setting. You have like that little daughter card board that comes with it.
Right.
Try to play with that a little bit. One says like select. Go into it, and there's one that says like a trapezoid and stuff.
Right.
You can do a lot of the monitor settings just from there and play with it a minute. You might figure some of that out.
Right. That sounds good, Tim. You know, hopefully Gilbert will try some of those settings and stuff. But if not, it sounds like he probably needs to go through there, do some cold solder joints, and you know, just see if he can't sort this out with maybe some convergence rings adjustments or something like that, right?
Yeah.
Now, what do you think about a cap kit on this? You think that'll be able to solve
it? I definitely think it might solve some of his issues and might help him be able to adjust things better.
Right.
So, it wouldn't hurt.
Yeah, but we would probably try the other two before we got there, right?
Yep.
I think that's what Tim says by rebuilding. He's talking about basically flyback, hot, and cap kit. Anytime he says a rebuild, that's what he talks about.
Yeah, I doubt those things are caught going on because it's all out of sync and stuff and just not getting a good, clear picture.
Right.
Remember, we had the case earlier where somebody had that and it was in the power supply, though.
Right.
So we really want to make sure. That's why I'm telling you also to let's plug it into a computer monitor. Make sure that we are getting a decent picture there.
Sounds good. So hopefully, Gilbert, that gives you a couple of things you can try. Get back to us, you know, give us an update, too.
Throwing one way out of the park here, could be a setting inside of his game that tells him what resolution, because it is a newer style monitor and he is using a computer, we want to make sure that the computer set on the resolution or you're going to get some really crazy stuff on your picture too, John.
Sure. Yeah, and actually I think we saw that with a sumo game, right? One of the big bubbles, if you guys have never seen that before. Those big bubble games are powered usually by PCs, usually have the Mech Warrior or Crimson Skies, a couple of those games built into it. We've seen that exact same problem where it was a resolution issue. So, Gilbert, that's another thing that you can definitely check out. But check out those things, give us an update, let us know how it's coming.
At least if he can pull it up on a PC monitor, he can make sure all the adjustments and everything are the same.
Sure. Sounds good. Okay, let's move on to Paulo. Now, Paulo says, hello, I am from Portugal. So, Tim, we got another international listener. Portugal's a long way off, man. That's all the way across an ocean. So,
but, I didn't even know they had internet over there.
or arcade games, right?
Yeah, no. No. Welcome, Paulo.
Yeah, we're glad that you listen. We're glad to have you as a listener. So, he says, I'm from Portugal, and I have recently been given a pinball machine, a Lethal Weapon 3, that I'm starting to restore. I have a problem that I hope that you could help me with. Could you please check this video? And he gives us a YouTube address. And if you could give me any hint as to what the problem might be, I would very much appreciate it. The pinball is working, some lights need to be replaced, the sound is okay, the matrix display used to work is fine, I have seen it working. The guy gave me the pinball and told me after a few minutes that the display started to work, okay, warming up, but now the pinball is on for hours and nothing is on the display. Thank you in advance for any help that you can give me, Paulo. So Tim, it sounds like, you know, he's got, you know, a plasma display. Obviously, Lethal Weapon has a newer style plasma display, and it works when you first turn it on, but then it goes out. What do you think is happening with this plasma display? Does it sound like it's a problem with the display itself, or maybe power supply, or what do you think?
Yeah, well, think about a plasma is a gas, right? And what happens is over time, a lot of that pinball games get a lot of beating on and stuff, and they just start going bad. And I have not found anywhere on the net or anybody that repairs them. Now, if there is, somebody please inform me, because I'd love to know what most people do when they get to this point. Now, you can check the connections going to it. You definitely want to make sure that the connections that is there to your little plasma board, that they're all good. There's usually a ribbon cable there. Make sure it's good. Then follow them back up to your motherboard and make sure that connection is good. Once those are, and kind of the things he's describing, there's not much you can do except replace the display.
Right. Now, are there any pinball guys in particular that you think, you know, might be a good place to get as far as getting a plasma display from for a good price? I mean, obviously, these things are kind of expensive, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, they're not cheap. You know, you could probably go and start off with Pinball Resource.
PBResource.com.
They may can sell him a used one or something out of a game.
Right.
Or they may refer him to something decent. Marco Specialties, if he has to buy a new one, somebody that I'm going to highly recommend, and that's easy to find on the web, Marco Specialties would be a great place to go. But, you know, they're not cheap either, so
right.
We're probably talking about a couple $100, but it's a pinball game. You got to do it. It's what you got to do to keep that thing running. But check your connection first, just in case it's something easy. More than likely, that plasma gas is already starting to leak out.
Now, what do you think about a power supply? I mean, do you think there could be some power issues here?
It would definitely wouldn't hurt to test, but probably just from what he's describing, from my experience with pinball games, they just start going bad. If everything else was playing right, not resetting, none of those issues, it's worth checking out. But I'm going to lean towards it's probably just time it's going out and he's losing the gas and stuff in there, and he needs to replace it.
That sounds good. So, Paula, hopefully that helps you out. You know, also, I will say this. Anybody who sent a video on YouTube, that uploaded the video to YouTube and sent it to us, we will add as a favorite video on our YouTube channel. So if you guys want to check out some of these videos, if you think that you can solve, you know, Paulo's problem, for instance, or Mike's problem with the NFL Blitz 99, the little sync issues that he had, take a look at those videos and comment on them. You know, and you can do that on YouTube, on our YouTube channel at youtube.com/varcadegames, or you can go to youtube.arcaderepairtips.com and go there and check out our favorite videos. And if you think you have an idea as to what one of these might be, you know, chime in there, leave a comment for them, and give them a little bit of your feedback. So, okay, so now we're going to move on to Tom. And Tom says, I have just bought myself an old arcade machine. After it's been on and playing for around 20 minutes, the screen starts to flicker, and what sounds like an electrical crackle can be heard. It continues to get worse until it seems best to turn it off before some damage is done to the screen. When the back is off, electrical arcing can be seen on the backboard of the screen. The monitor is a Hanterex model MTC9000. Any help or advice would be appreciated. Many thanks, Tom. So, Tim, he's getting some arcing, which is never a good thing for an arcade game. I mean, it's never something that you want to see. Sounds like it's a Hanterex arcade monitor. What can Tom do in order to get this thing back into shape?
Well, that's going to need the full rebuild there. And if Tom's comfortable with it, he can talk to Bob Roberts about getting a cap kit and a flyback and a hot for it and do those things. Otherwise, that's definitely going to be one that he'd want to send in to us or to Arcade Cup or somebody to repair. I will say the Hanterex is not a very, very fun monitor to work on, but parts are out there and... Yeah, when you're getting, it's probably his flyback, but we want to make sure while we're in there to do some of those other repairs and check for any shorts or something and something else. While you're in there, let's just get the hot, flyback, cap, go to Bob Roberts, get it, and do it all.
Sounds good. So, Tom, hopefully you can just buy a rebuild kit for your Hanterex, apply that onto it, and then get there. If you don't feel comfortable with that, though, you can always send it to Michael at TVRepairOnline.com, or you can send it to Chad at Arcade Cup. So try it out yourself, though. I mean, we're always going to encourage you to try it out yourself and see if you can do it yourself. I mean, we want you guys to do that. So, you know, Tom, if you feel comfortable, tackle it yourself and go from there.
Yeah, and sometimes we don't know, Tom, if you've been watching our site from day one or if you just stumbled across it, as one guy just said, you know. So depending on your skill level, if you're willing to try or attempt some of that, you can watch our videos on it, and that might would help you. Also, our newest DVD has some extra stuff on there on the hot flyback that's not on the website. You can purchase that soon in about a week. So,
yeah. So hopefully that'll give you some places to at least start, though, by that rebuild
kit,
Tom. If
not, contact us, and we can definitely do a repair for you.
Sure. Okay, let's move on to Craig. Now, Craig says, hello, I'm kicking around buying a San Francisco Rush arcade, and the only problem is that the shifter doesn't work in third gear. The gear is the only issue, and I was wondering what you thought would be wrong with it. I am new to this, and if it's an easy fix, I didn't want to spend a bunch on buying a whole new shifter setup, and found out it is something else. Any help you'd give would be appreciated. Thank you, Craig. So, Tim, we got Craig here, kicking around buying a San Francisco Rush. You're very familiar with those.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what do you think's wrong with the shifter? Is it something he can fix or something he needs to buy?
No, he definitely can fix it. And it's a really cheap part. Most of the time, the way it works is everybody knows how a joystick works by now, probably. You know, the shifter kind of looks like a joystick.
Right.
And when you're shifting or moving the joystick, it actually hits a little switch up inside there, a tiny micro switch, which is a lot smaller than a push button.
Right.
And the way that they have it work is it has a little U-shaped piece in there, kind of like a little clothespin looking thing. And when you hit that, it pinches it and actually makes, you hit one side and it makes pinches the other side and makes it hit the switch. Well, the part number that he needs is a 96-0089-00.
From HAP.
From HAP Controls. And you guys can go to HAP Controls and look that up if you're just curious how one works. It has a breakdown of the diagram and shows him. And they're real simple. You just kind of getting to the part is the hardest part, but you can usually remove them. You might have to take a couple screws out or something to get to them with a little screwdriver. Just take it out. It snaps in, and you put another one. I said a clothespin. I meant a hair, like a bobby pin.
Bobby pin.
A bobby pin is what I meant to say, John. That's what it kind of looks like. And you could actually take probably a bobby pin and make one work if you had to.
Right.
Or a little piece of I've taken a piece of a longer switch and made one of those work temporarily. So they're real simple. There's not much to them. And definitely easy to repair. That part probably costs 50 cents or a dollar.
So you think this is something he could fix for less than $10?
I would definitely look at that diagram. Now, it does get a little more complicated. The worst case scenario, you totally screw it up. You buy a new one for $70 or $80, replace the whole thing, and keep that one for backup parts.
Sure. Sounds good. So, Craig, hopefully that answers your question. I don't know how much you're going to be paying for this San Francisco Rush, but it sounds like you can get it fixed for pretty cheap. So.
Yeah, and you might even find a used one out there.
Sure, that's a good point. So, okay, let's move to Tom, another Tom, Tim. He says, hello, I just bought a one-slot Neo Geo in a Dynamo cabinet with a Wells Garner 25K7191, otherwise known as like a 7000 series Wells Garner monitor. It worked perfect at the seller's house, but when I got it home, the monitor looked like a tie-dyed shirt. I readjusted everything, including the yoke. I got the monitor looking pretty good, except for the bottom left corner, which still has a purple tint at the top right and a green tint to it. It is not always there, only when the game is wide or when there is a sudden change of brightness. I have manually degaussed 100 times and repositioned the game 90 degrees and just can't get rid of the problem. He's tried everything we usually recommend. That's good.
He's going down my list here.
That's right. Any suggestion would be much appreciated. P.S. I just wanted to say thanks for all that you do for the arcade community. Everything I know about this hobby, I learned from you guys, and you gave me the confidence to do arcade repairs myself. P.S.S. The wife says I got ripped off on this machine and can't bring another one home till I get it fixed, so please help. So Tom is obviously in a tight spot here, Tim, as far as the hobby is concerned. So obviously he's tried the two things that we would have already told him, to degauss and to reposition the game 90 degrees. So Tim, what else could it be that he needs to adjust?
Well, he can try those convergence rings. That kind of my last suggestion, because he's already done a couple I would have suggested already.
Right.
But he needs to mark them where they go. Maybe we need to jump up on this one.
We're going to do a video.
Let's do a video, because we don't even have to have one that's in a game. I can show you how to make a mark and do this. But let's do those convergence rings. A little bit of messing. Just make sure you mark where you start. Okay, having said that, I don't know if that's really the problem. It really sounds like a degaussing issue. So if you got a monitor that just will not degauss, then we start looking at, well, what's making that, causing that issue? Well, it could be the rebar in your floor like it is in my shop.
Right.
Maybe you need to put down a mat or a piece of carpet, see if that helps. If that doesn't help, well, it could be your speakers to your game.
Right.
Do this. Take out your speakers completely. Get the magnet and get it away from your monitor. Tell me if it looks okay. Now, if it does, you can buy a shielded speaker, or you can shield your speaker, and you could probably do some research on that, how to shield your speaker. Usually I just buy shielded speakers. I think they're about, I don't know, $8 or $10
from
Bob
cheap.
Roberts or Hat Controls. I think Bob sells them, though. And replace that. I have seen that issue where you just can't get it out of the corner, and then it ended up being a speaker. So probably somebody had replaced it, and maybe it had a they put a better speaker in there. They wanted some better sounds, or they got an old Pioneer or something. It was a little better speaker or a higher ohm, and it would give that little discoloration in that corner. I bet you that corner's near a speaker.
Right.
That's just a guess.
Right.
From looking at it, Tom. So let us know. By all means, let's get this game fixed as soon as possible, because we want you to be able to please your wife and get another game.
That's right. Sounds good, Tim.
Tell her that I said that that's not uncommon for stuff like this to happen just from a move, and do not feel like you got ripped off.
No. I don't think he got ripped off at all. I think this is just a common problem that you're going to fight with monitors in general. You know, it's magnetism kind of gets caught up in, the way I understand it, there's like a metal mesh, you know, that sits on your monitor. The shadow mask is what it's called. And what happens is that metal mesh gets magnetized, and that's what causes these little discoloration issues. And it just sounds like that bottom corner of yours is magnetized and just will not come unmagnetized. And so, you know, like Tim said, there's a couple of things you can try, you know, the convergence rings. You know, you can try some different things and hopefully get that magnetism kind of out of there, right, Tim?
Yeah.
So hopefully that'll help you out, Tom. Now let's move on to Andres. And Andres says, hello. First and foremost, thank you for taking the time to address my question. I live in Tucson, Arizona, and I recently acquired a Space Invaders arcade cabinet that was in pretty bad condition. When I picked it up, there was no sound and no display. I was able to correct the two issues by replacing a few components that were bad and cleaning up the board. I recently hit a roadblock. Now that the display works, there are several segments on the screen that I can't seem to focus it. I have tried adjusting the focus, but I've had no success. I've attached a short 15-second video of the problem. Have you seen anything like it? Also, do you have any local contacts and references here in Tucson, Arizona that you could pass along? I am finding it difficult to find anyone who is willing to help with the machine. Thank you in advance. So Andres here has it looks like he recently acquired a Space Invaders arcade cabinet, Tim, but he's having some focusing issues. What do you think the focusing issues could be related to?
Well, you know, we're talking about a black and white monitor. Again, it's not my area of real expertise, but they do have a flyback on there.
Right.
And it could be that he is in Tucson, Arizona, which is pretty close to Phoenix, or at least in the same state as Phoenix.
I don't know how close
they are, to be
sorry
honest. If that's not real close. Nothing out there I don't think is real close.
That's right.
Okay, but what I'm going to recommend is Phoenix Arcade. If you talk to Darren, he knows all the repair peoples in that state probably and can recommend somebody to you, or he might be able to help you.
Well, it looks like they're about 2 hours away. That'd be like between here and Dallas or something like that.
So if he'll go to phoenixarcade.com, though, and talk to Darren, tell him there may be some really good repair guys in that area that can help with that, or Darren might even be able to help him. But it definitely sounds like he has some – he just can't focus. We need
flyback.
To probably replace that flyback. Problem is they get harder and harder to find with that chassis. That doesn't mean that we can't help him find one, though. It may be going through John at flippers.com, who specializes in those black and white monitor type repairs. Mike could help him find that part a little easier.
And if I remember correctly, too, as far as discharging a black and white is much different. Or is that a – I might be thinking –
Yeah, he writes in there that we shouldn't use the screwdriver method to discharge the black and white monitor.
Yeah, I couldn't remember if it was black and whites or if it was vector. I know it was one or the other. It might have been both that – you know, it's not really good to use a screwdriver method on these older monitors like that. And so, you know, something to keep in mind. You might not, you know, obviously our safely discharging an arcade monitor is for your typical arcade monitor, but what you have in that Space Invaders is a black and white, so be very careful. You might get in touch with him at Flippers instead of doing our method that we would normally do.
Correct.
So, Okay, so Andres, hopefully that answers your question. Probably something that you need to do as far, you know, as far as getting a flyback for that monitor. But who was it that you said to get in touch with, Tim, at Flippers?
At John at Flippers, or he could definitely contact Phoenix Arcade, just because he knows a lot of people in Arizona that could help you probably.
Right. So hopefully that answers your question, Andres. We hope you get that game working soon. Sounds like it's mostly working, just a little bit of a focusing issue. So, okay, let's move on to Todd. Todd says, hello, I just discovered your videos on YouTube and have started watching them. I thought I might run this problem by you so you could help me focus in on the likely cause. My guess at this point is the vertical IC issue. I purchased a Super Pac-Man project cabinet last night, and from what I can tell, it probably has a Ms. Pac-Man board inside it. The machine has many issues, but when I power it on, the monitor comes on, but there's only about half an inch wide picture running from the top to the bottom of the screen. You can actually make out some of the characters as they go through that area. Also, I'm not sure if it's squished or only showing that portion of the screen. What is your best guess? Caps or IC or something else? Thanks, Todd. So Todd's got a Super Pac-Man with a Ms. Pac-Man board in it, Tim. And he wants to know, what's this problem? It sounds like the monitor's squished. And you know, if I had to guess, I would say it's not just that section of the screen, but the whole screen that's probably running through this half-inch area, correct?
Right.
So what's his best bet?
It's coming from the top to the bottom, so we have a horizontal collapse.
Right.
Not a vertical.
That's correct.
I got this backwards thought. I emailed you. Let's go back to the horizontal collapse. So probably need to get with Bob Roberts and get him to send you a kit on the horizontal portions.
Right.
Now, vertical IC might help, but the way you're describing sounds like a horizontal collapse and not a vertical.
So something in the horizontal section, not necessarily in the vertical section.
That's what it sounds like. Sounds like he needs to get the horizontal.
Touch up the solder on the chips in that area and probably do a cap kit.
Yeah, there's a kit sold for the horizontal part.
That's right.
That has all those, like we talked about, the chiclet looking ones.
So that's the propylene capacitors?
The propylene capacitors and maybe a chip or whatever, if there is one for his style monitor. So I'm going to send you to Bob and try to get the horizontal kit and do that instead of just a full cap kit at this time.
Sounds good. So he needs the propylene capacitors, which I think we talk about on adjusting the width coil in that article. Not
yes.
in the video, but in the article. Well, we talk about it a little bit in the video, but there's more detail in the article
about it.
Yeah,
he needs to get a coil, too, while he's there. They're easy to take 30 seconds to replace that thing, and hardly ever see any that are in really great shape.
Right, so he needs to look in that section with those propylene capacitors, probably replace a couple, and maybe even the horizontal width coil as well. So hopefully, Todd, that gives you some places to start. And now we'll move on to Foster. And Foster says, I have a Midway Play Mechanics Invasion the Abductors arcade game. The problem is that I can only get one gun to work, and it will only work if the green is turned up on the screen. Any thoughts on why this is? Thanks, Foster. Now, Tim, we covered light gun games, I want to say either in the last podcast or the one before that, pretty in-depth as far as the things that we talk about and how to get them working. He's saying if he only turns up the green, could it be that if he turns down the green and maybe turns up the brightness, he could get it working?
I actually suggested that to them, and he said he has done that. I'm reading his email right now. I've done that. Something else I've noticed on the color adjustment screens, I can get the blue adjusted. When I get the green adjusted, the blue turns green and vice versa. Maybe a bad chassis. So he probably is not getting a good enough screen or colors right to help him. He can only get one gun to work. The other one work if the green is turned up. So still sounds like it could be a gun issue. If you get one gun to work and the other one doesn't work, well, that tells us a lot about his. It has to be something wrong with his gun.
Right.
But the fact that he's getting some of this crazy stuff going on, he definitely needs to do a cap kit on his monitor. But if you look inside your gun, take it apart, there's a little board in there. You can reflow the solder joints, especially on the back of where the little LED is that, you know, that gun shoots the gun.
Right.
You need to make sure and reflow the solders, make sure those legs aren't broke. I bet you if you switch those boards, the problem would follow that board. You may end up having to repair or replace that board.
Oh, yeah. Okay. That sounds good, Tim. So he probably needs to do you're thinking a cap kit, and then, you know, try to see if he can't fix up that
monitor. Yeah, he's still got some issues with this monitor, but if one gun works, so that means the other one could possibly work. And on that little bitty board, I mean, there's not a lot to repair on it, but I don't know if it's going to be more – I don't know if he can still get that board. Or if he, I'm not real familiar with that, but Play Mechanics, so it's pretty new. I guarantee you that board is probably available through HAP.
Yeah, so that's probably a good idea.
Little green circuit board inside the gun's what I'm after, and
right.
He needs to take his gun apart, with a Torx bit screwdriver and all that stuff, it's kind of a pain. But once you do it a couple times, you'll have it down. That little circuit board, make sure the connectors and all that stuff are good in there, but your problem is up in your gun, and probably need to get that another board for that.
That sounds good. So hopefully he can try that, Tim, and just see if it works for him. You know, try doing a cap kit on his chassis, try getting the little board for his gun and replacing that as well. So hopefully that helps you out, Foster. And let's move to Michael, our final website question. Whoo, Tim, I worked up a sweat. You know, like I said, it's hot here in Texas, man. I'm burning up now, but... Michael says, I'm trying to figure out where to purchase a 200-ohm pot to repair the vertical size of my Lethal Enforcer's game. Any suggestions as to where to find one? Thank you, Mike. So, Tim, where can Mike find one?
TheRealBobRoberts.net. I think Bob has those, and I emailed Michael back and told him that. So,
yeah.
Let me know, Michael, if they don't. You know, we'll help you find another source. But Bob probably has them, or Hat probably has them, too, but... Bob probably has some.
Yeah, that's a good idea, Tim. So hopefully he can go to TheRealBobRoberts.net and get that 200-ohm pot that he's looking for. So,
right.
Okay, let's move on to our YouTube questions. And fortunately, Tim, there's not as many of these as there are of the website questions, and most of them should go pretty quick. So, okay, we got one from Burpism, and he says, why do manufacturers produce an electrolytic capacitor at a rating of 25 volt when a 50 volt or even a 35 volt rating will do the job? Would it be cost-effective for the manufacturer to eliminate low-voltage rating caps and produce just high-voltage rating caps? I noticed that an electrolytic capacitor with a voltage rating of 35 volt has the same footprint as a 25-volt rated cap when placed into the PCB. So, Tim, why do they use 25 when they could use a 35 or a 50? And, I mean, I think more than anything, maybe just related more to cost and how the circuit board is designed, correct?
Right, and I don't know. I mean, you know, I've always thought that, well, if a 50 will work, you can go up in volt. Well, then why have 50,000 volts different kinds? But I imagine that it does have, I know that they do cost different. And I assume that, you know, if you're in a big time production of some kind of boards and you can save 15 cents per cap, that, you know, and you put in a couple thousand caps, you're saving a couple thousand dollars or something like that, they're going to do that. So
right.
It's probably a cost issue.
Yeah, I think so, too. But, you know, there's
but,
no
you
telling.
Know, somebody out there smarter than me may know exactly a better answer. I think it's a cost issue. But if somebody does wants to contribute, please do. Kind of like one of those things I'd like to know myself.
Sure. So hopefully that answers Burpism's question. We'll move on to Necrophangist 1234. Is that how you say that, Tim?
That's as good a guess as I can.
Okay. He says, this is concerning replacing a plug on a power cord. He says, my ground wire is the only wire that is color-coded. Does it matter if I switch the positive and negative wires? If so, how can I test to see which wire is positive and which wire is negative? I really enjoy all of your videos. They have been quite helpful. So, Tim, how do you tell which one's a negative and which one's positive?
Okay. Again, I'm going to give you the Tim version on this one. If it didn't matter, there wouldn't be two different ones. Right?
That's true.
The same color.
Right.
I'm just saying that I've mixed them up and games have worked just fine.
Yeah.
But at the same time, there's a reason one is neutral and one is ground. What I do is simple. And there is a way to test and a way to easily do it. Okay? Now, I didn't say it was real super safe, so be careful. This is a disclaimer. I want you to be careful when you do this. If you put the black lead on one of the wires and the red lead on the other wire, if you get a negative voltage, you're getting the neutral. Or the bigger, you know, on most plugs,
right.
One of them is fatter.
Right.
That's the one you want to hook up the... Well, help me here if some of my electrical friends will get me right. That's the one that's the black wire normally goes to.
Gotcha.
Now, we might need to do a little bit more research on this. And maybe somebody that's, honestly, I just do this stuff, folks, just from memory and from what I've done and from what I've experienced. I do know that if inside you have a screw, one of them is silver colored, that's the one you're white. Nobody taught me this. I just noticed every time I opened up one, the white wire was on the silver one.
Right.
And then the black went to the other one. The silver normally goes to the shorter or the smaller, skinnier one, and the black went to the fatter one.
Gotcha.
That's just from my experience. And I just tend to do things the way they were.
Right.
That's just my way of doing things, you know. So I think you can test them which is positive by hooking up a meter to it.
Okay.
And we can go from there.
Okay, that sounds good. So, you know, he just needs to do that then probably, huh? He just, you know.
But you know, it really boils down, does it really matter? I don't know. Honestly, I wish somebody could explain that to me in easy terms. I go to websites and stuff, and I guess it matters to some extent, or they wouldn't have them hooked up different ways.
Right.
But I know plenty of games that work when you plug them in.
Either
just
way.
Like that.
Right.
So some of my real electronic or in-depth people that know the answer, please post and let us know. Straighten me out, and I'll tell everybody.
There you go. So hopefully NecroFan, just that answers your question. Like Tim said, you know, you're just going to have to, you know, it's kind of one of those things that even we're really not sure about. So hopefully we can get maybe one of our listeners to chime in on that as well. So, okay, let's move on to AdHerring08. He says, "Hey there, I've discovered your arcade repair tutorials a few weeks ago and have found them to be super helpful. I just purchased a Dynamo cabinet, an HS9 plywood. It's a JAMA cabinet with a CPS2 and a copy of Marvel vs. Capcom installed. It's got a 25-inch arcade monitor and what I think is a K7400 monitor chassis. I am fixing up this cab, and I'm going to use a JPEG to hook it up to a PC to run the Hyperspin front end I've been working on. Your tutorials have helped me to spot and understand everything I might have had a question about. Everything from how to unlatch the control panel to spotting the isolation transformer in the back. In the spirit of refurbishing building a cabinet, could you make a video on how to drill a buttonhole in an arcade panel? What about the plexiglass that goes on top? How about some videos on general arcade cabinet refurbishment? How do you patch holes in a cabinet? How do you restore the paint job on a coin door? How about applying artwork? Any refurbishing tips would be so awesome. Thank you so much for your awesome video series. Adam Herring from San Rita, Guam." So, Tim, Guam, another international listener there.
Wow.
And, yes, definitely, we can do some videos on general cabinet refurbishment. We kind of take that for granted, I guess, Tim, that a lot of people know how to do,
right.
like patches and stuff with Bondo.
Well,
and, I mean, if that's what you want to see, we'll definitely
do it. We definitely can do that, maybe make a section for that.
Right.
So I'll start by just answering a couple of them. You need a 1 1/8-inch
hole saw.
You need the one that the bit goes all the way through so you can start the pilot hole to do the button with.
Yes.
Okay. That will help you a lot.
One and one eighth inch, right?
1 1/8.
Okay.
If you have the right tool, that will help you. And I think I'm right on that one. I'm almost positive 1 1/8.
Okay.
Then what, a plexiglass that goes on top?
Well, I think he's talking on top of the control panel.
Or the control panel.
Yeah, and
okay.
The way we usually cut that, we cut that with our, we have a table saw that
yes.
we use to cut that. And when we drill those buttonholes, what you can do is you can take a piece of plexi, screw it down to your control panel, and then take like your laminating router
mm-hmm.
and go around the edge of your control panel, cutting that plexi around it.
Right.
You can do either one of those. If you want the best plexi, you need to get the anti-cracking kind.
Yeah, you want to get Lexan. You want to get the stuff, the higher dollar stuff.
Right.
And what you also do, remember, John, we also put a piece of tape where we're going to drill the hole.
Right.
And we go really slow. Drill the pilot hole first. And then the first second that, I'll tell you what, though, guys, to be honest with you, we have taken every single precaution in the book, and sometimes still they crack.
Yes.
But you just want to go slow. When you start doing that, that's when it usually cracks, is right at the start. If you hit it too hard, make sure you got a very sharp, I would almost say if you're going to be that, you really want to be particular about it, it's almost worth buying a brand new hole saw
right.
when you're doing one,
yeah.
just because you want it to be sharp and ready to go.
Sure. He also says, let's see.
Patch holes in a cabinet. We
yeah.
use Bondo like you use on cars, and you gob it and make it.
Wood
filled.
Bondo, right?
Yeah. Well, I've used fiberglass and everything on
right.
cabinet.
Right.
Bondo is
just
it'll work.
Right.
Yeah, multi-purpose Bondo. Usually they sell at Lowe's is good. And then gob it, leave it over, and then you sand down, and that will make it look like brand new after you paint it.
Okay.
You won't even know the difference most of the time.
What about restoring the paint job on a coin door, Tim?
Paint job on a coin door, usually we take the door off the game. We take like blue painter's tape and we tape around like the bezels where it says 25 cents.
Right.
And then the rest is usually just some spray paint. I highly recommend that you use that plastic spray, Krylon spray paint.
Right.
For plastics, but it actually works good on everything else. Or if you want, they have a textured paint that kind of gives it that rough look.
Right.
But just make sure and sand it all really good first, and then spray paint works really good.
We might also mention that when we paint control panels, we like to use that textured paint because it feels
yeah.
good on your hands. It's kind of grippy, and so if you're going to be painting a control panel, you know, and not putting the plexi over it, you know, you might want to use some of that stuff. His last question though is applying the artwork, and we actually have a really good tip for that, right, Tim?
Right. We use Windex, and a squeegee, like you wash windows with, a little bit, about a foot wide seems to work the best. What you want to do is spray Windex or soap and water, if you don't have Windex, but Windex, it just works so good.
Right.
Spray.
It doesn't have to be the real Windex. It can be the Windux.
Yeah, the high top brand or whatever. Right. That's fine. But, you know, the blue stuff, blue window cleaner. And what you do is you spray the artwork and the cabinet, and then you can put the artwork down and you Windex it right down the middle. We do need to do some videos on this stuff.
But what you do is, you put it against the cabinet and you squeegee out the bubbles.
Right.
So, like, you just take that squeegee right against the artwork.
But while it's wet, you can kind of move it.
Right.
And
exactly.
Then when it'll dry, some of those bubbles will, most of the bubbles will go in and give it a day or two to dry. If you got some bubbles just being hard-headed, you can poke a pinhole in them and then squeeze around that pinhole. You won't see it, and it'll kind of do that.
Yeah.
That's just a couple tips off the top of my head, Jonathan, but we do need to, we'll try to shoot
some
videos on
that. Obviously, it sounds like we could shoot a couple of videos on that.
Thank you for requesting that.
Yeah.
Honestly, we got some at the house right now that kind of needs done, so maybe we'll get to work on that pretty soon.
Sure. So Ad Hearing 08, hopefully the answers, gives you a couple ideas on how to do some just general cabinet.
Yeah, definitely. We're doing a Tron right now that we could show a lot of this stuff on. We'll get to that
soon. Okay, so now we got a Cameron Metcalf Kelly, and this is concerning the installing a CapKit video. He says, have I destroyed the whole chassis board if I got a little too hot on one of the flyback pins and I lifted the copper trace from the board? I pushed it back down and secured it with solder as best I could, and both are touching. So, Tim, it sounds like he lifted the trace up when he was trying to solder one of the flyback pins, just a hair. But it sounds like he pushed it back down and soldered it down as best he could, and it's making a connection. What do you think?
Well, that's just it. Is it making a connection? What he can do is go from follow that trace and see where it ends up. Take his meter and put it on one end and on the other end and see if you got a dial test and see if you got continuity. If it continuity it beeps and you're fine, that's good. But if it's not, you didn't destroy it, you didn't kill it. What they do, professionals do this, take a piece of wire. Generally, they use jumper wire, which is a little thinner, but I've used regular wire off a harness.
Right.
And solder it there to where that trace goes, and then I take some hot glue and squirt a couple dabs on that wire just to hold it to the board so that it sucked to the board. A lot of you guys have pulled your chassis over, and you've seen where a wire is added on there. And jumpered. And that's okay. I mean, it works. It's not the ideal, but it works. And it'll do that for you. If you have any more questions to that, Cameron, email me or contact me. I can go into detail, or we could shoot a video on that real quick.
Right. So hopefully that answers Cameron Metcalf Kelly's question. Now, Tim, we also got I've Nothing to Say here, and he says, hi, the monitor on my arcade machine is giving me a little trouble. On the left side of the monitor, the picture is slightly darker, while on the right side, it's a little brighter. Could this be magnet damage, or is there a way I can fix this? I know very little about arcade machines, and this is my first one. Thanks, Cody. Now, Tim, we've seen this before, and in the past, it seems like this is a cap kit, correct?
Yeah, there was
a cap issue.
Yeah, it's a cap. Sounds
like maybe
a cap
even
issue.
Like one or two caps, not an entire cap
probably
kit.
Probably right in the middle. If you see some swollen caps, you want to replace them, but hey, get the cap kit for that style monitor. If you need help with that, let us know, and let's replace those caps on the monitor, and I bet that fixes that issue.
Yeah, so Cody, let's do it. Maybe just an entire cap kit on this while we're in there replacing those couple. You could probably pinpoint it down to a couple if you did a couple of tests and things, but let's go ahead and do the entire cap kit and fix it that way. Watch our video on installing a cap kit for more information. Okay, and we have BlackhawkFan54 as our last YouTube question. And this is concerning checking a classic power supply. And he says, interesting point about the additional wires. I would have thought that both those are isolation transformers. Thanks for the tip. But I have a question. Do either of these items hold a charge like capacitors do? And if so, do they need to be discharged if you work on them? So, Tim, we've got our isolation transformer. We've got our power supply down in our cabinet. Do they hold a charge, and do we need to discharge them?
Well, I don't think so. But, of course, just make sure your game is off and power's not on. Seems like I have run across maybe a little bit of extra charge, but not like a capacitor.
Right.
If any, it's so small it wasn't even worth mentioning, really. And somebody please correct me if I'm wrong. Maybe it's just that the ones I'm working on are dead. I don't know. I have not run across that.
Okay. So hopefully, Blackhawk Fan, that answers your question. If it is still storing voltage, it's probably not enough that you're going to really get a big shot.
No, I don't. As long as the power's not hooked up to it, I mean, that's what its purpose is. It really doesn't store.
Right.
It more converts.
Right.
Which is a little bit different than what a capacitor actually does. Its purpose is to store that and stuff. So I don't think that you'll have any issues like that. One thing I've noticed that even Stan does all the time. He wears like those little surgical plastic gloves.
Right.
One thing, he just to keep his hands from getting so dirty sometimes, you know, even something like that, just if you're a little shy,
right,
would help you.
Sure.
Would get you over that fear. I don't think you'll have any issues with it, though.
Sounds good. So hopefully I answer your question, Blackhawk fan. Well, Tim, we've answered them all.
Oh, yay.
We're at the 2.5 hour mark right now, so this one's going to be a little bit longer. We apologize for the length, but we like to get every single one of your questions in there, regardless of if it takes us a little bit longer than usual.
Sure, so we don't want to exclude anybody.
Right. But now we're going to do a little discussion here with our friend Mark Nellis from the community website on his experience with the 8-liner's chassis. Tim, you might know this, that he's been fighting some issues with the 8-liner's chassis. We've talked about it on the show before, but we just want to give you all a little update. So let's go ahead and let's talk to Mark about his experiences with the 8-liner's chassis. So here we are with our community manager, Mark Nellis, and he's obviously the guy who's in charge of our Facebook page, and he's actually been having a couple of issues with our 8-liner's chassis that we've recommended in the past. So, Mark, why don't you go ahead and give us just a couple of details about what you've been facing with the 8-liner's chassis.
Well, just want to say hi to everybody, and thanks for all the good Facebook posts and everything. But, yeah, basically, there was a few people that commented on the Facebook site and said, hey, you know, why don't you do a video on this 8-liner's chassis? We'd like to know more about it and, you know, how to set one up. And what it is he sells a chassis, and it's $60 for a 19-inch monitor. And you can take the TV tube, just from a regular TV, and put it into that chassis, and it'll work like an arcade monitor.
Right.
You have to do a few things that I found out. You know, you have to check the impedance of the tube that you buy.
Right.
And there's a few things you have to check. But anyway, I mean, I was looking more on his website, and he also sells one that's completely made for $110. And then I was looking around town here in San Antonio, and I didn't find a suitable replacement tube in my Goodwill. So I was like, well, okay, you know, $110 isn't so bad, you know, considering the regular arcade monitors, you know, run nowadays for 19-inch, like, you know, $300 and up.
Right.
So I ordered one of the $110 tubes, $110 monitor, you know, with the tube installed, and it came in the mail, and then I planned to put it in the Centipede, which I have.
Right.
And it has really bad screen burn. So when I got around to putting it in, the screen, I could never feel like about the top 4 inches of the screen.
Right.
And no matter how I adjusted it, you know, the monitor is mounted vertically in the Centipede. So to feel that area, you're actually making horizontal adjustments on your adjustments.
Right.
And so I tried to adjust the horizontal width coil. I tried to adjust the, you know, horizontal position. All that stuff for hours and hours. Because, you know, if somebody sends me something, you know, I'm going to make sure it's not me before I, you know, call tech support, you know, or something like that.
Oh, sure, sure.
Anyway, so that didn't work. And then I kind of, you know, sent the message out to you guys saying, hey, you know, do you guys know anything about what I should be adjusting? You know, it seems like I'm doing everything right. And Tim gave me some advice, and because my Centipede monitor, what I found out later on was, is it's that board actually, it has two sync wires. It has one for horizontal sync and vertical sync.
Right.
And Tim suggested twist both of those wires together and then hook it to the sync wire, which is the white wire on there.
Right.
And I tried that, and that didn't really make a change. So I'm still frustrated at this point. And then this is over a period of days that
right.
this is happening. I sent the email to 8liners.com, you know, describing the problem. And I had a video of it that I made that I sent to Tim and to you,
right.
you know, to kind of describe the problem. And I sent it to him, too. Sent him the link, the little YouTube link. And I didn't get a reply for, like, about, well, it was three, I waited like 2 days, I think. And I didn't get any reply to my email. And then, so I called him after I didn't get a reply after that I waited that amount of time. I called him, got him on the phone right away, first time. And then he said that what it is that monitor or that board works on a, has a negative or I'm sorry, positive composite sink. And you have to, in order to, for it to work with that monitor, you have to convert it over to a negative composite sink.
Right.
And he sent me a little schematic of a circuit that I should build to do that. And I haven't decided if I'm going to do, but he did say, well, you know, it'll work in any other game, you know, and he's like, I tested it before I sent it out, but, you know, I plan to put this in my centipede, so that's the problem for me. Okay. You know, it's just, I picked the one game that this thing isn't going to work in, you know. I guess it's kind of good just so people out there know that these monitors and these chassis won't work in every game. You know, you may have to make some adjustments as far as making this little circuit. I'm thinking I may order that circuit in the mail. I mean, the parts to make that circuit.
Sure.
So that's where I'm at right now on that.
Okay.
You know.
Well, we really wanted to get your input since we have talked about it quite a bit on the podcast and everything. Just get your personal experience about what's been going on with it. I know that they sent you to 2-bit site to a diagram to build that circuit. And I'll go ahead and read that out for people. I'll also put it in the podcast notes. But that URL that they gave him was http://www.2bits.com/RGBP/POSSEP2NEGComp.html. And again, this will be on the website notes for the podcast. You guys can get it there. But if you guys are having some problems, there's another guy on our podcast, Mark, where he was trying to do the same thing, convert a negative to a positive sink, I believe is what it was. And it was for he was trying to put a MAME into a Donkey Kong Jr. cabinet, and he had basically, you know, he needed positive sink, but or he needed positive he had positive sink coming from the JPEG, but he had a negative sink on the monitor. So kind of the same kind of thing. But it's obviously not as plug-and-play as we initially thought, it sounds like.
That's correct. I looked up the part. The main part of this circuit is it's an IC. For those people who don't know, that stands for integrated circuit. And it's a little chip, just like it'd be a ROM chip on your board. And I looked up I went and looked that up, and that little IC only costs about 30 cents, but I think it was on Janko.
Right.
But they're going to charge you like $5, you know, to ship you that little 30-cent part. So
sure.
I'm like, well, to make it worth my while, I need to, like, figure out a bunch of other stuff to order. That way I get my money's worth on my shipping.
Sure.
So I'm going to just order a bunch of caps and stuff that I know I'm going to need in the future. So I recommend that to anybody who's going to do this. Just, you know, make it worth your while on your shipping.
Sure. Tim, you got anything from Mark here as far as his eight-large chances goes?
No, Mark, it sounds... Are you totally disappointed, or after talking to the guy, do you... I mean, is it just like...
Tim, he was pretty helpful on the phone. He does have a strong accent, though. I don't know where it's from. I couldn't figure out where his accent was from, because sometimes I had to ask him a couple times, you know, repeat himself. But he was helpful on the phone. I was disappointed on the email response. I got no response at all. But, you know, it's not my fault that... It's not his fault that I picked the wrong game to put it in. You know, I just have an old game. I'm sure this monitor probably works. It would work fine in any other, you know, game. I don't have another one to put it in right now that I could test it on.
Right.
But he did say he tested it before he sent it out. And so I'm not going to completely down somebody's product until, you know, I've seen it work.
Okay, and I think that's the right attitude to have. I mean, obviously, there have been quite a few people who have had really good luck with it, it seems like. I've read some reviews. It seems like the reviews, though, either are overwhelmingly positive or overwhelmingly negative. There's not a whole lot of in-between. So people either have really good luck with it or no luck at all, it sounds like. So you actually do sound like you're kind of in the middle, though. So maybe...
Yeah, well, I haven't kind of made up my mind yet. I guess maybe if this... negative sink conversion doesn't work, then I'll probably be on the negative side.
Right. And I think that's probably the attitude to have. Hopefully this will get you all fixed up. I mean, what you might do, too, is just pull another cabinet up next to it just to see if you can hook it up to another to something that does use the positive sink by default and see if it works out of there. Yeah, I mean, you know, it just sounds like...
I might do that. I have some other cabinets. It's just like I kind of don't want to bust them out. But I guess I might need to do that just to test my monitor.
Right. Well, we thank you for your input on this. Like I said, I really wanted to get you on to talk about it since you have been fighting it quite a bit. I mean, we mentioned Mark a lot of times on the podcast, guys, so this is the first time you've gotten to really hear him talk and everything. But Mark does just an absolutely outstanding job on our Facebook page, keeping up, you know, with new news and all that good stuff, and currently running that contest, right, Mark?
Oh, yeah, the contest has been going good. Somebody sent me in another entry today, Pac-Man Cocktail. So get on there on the Facebook site and take a look at it. And if you haven't already sent in your contest entries, send them in.
Yeah. And again, you know, the Facebook page can be found at facebook.arcaderepairtips.com. And those entries for the contest can be sent to community@arcaderepairtips.com. Those go directly to Mark. So if you guys want to get in on the contest, you can send them there. So, Mark, is there anything you want to say about, you know, the Facebook site or anything like that while we're talking to you?
The only thing I'd like to add is, I think Tim has said before, you know, we're not the guru gods of gaming. We're just some guys that like games and like to help people. But it doesn't mean you guys out there that are in the community can't help, be helpers also. So if you see someone posting a question or, you know, and you want to answer it and you know the answer, you know, go ahead. You know, we're not the only ones that can and post stuff on there. Or if you want to post some news or anything, that's what this Facebook site is for.
Right. And, it's a great community. I think we're about 75 members strong, like we said earlier. And, you know, it's great to see all the people on there. There have really been some great questions. And you guys, Mark is very diligent about trying to answer your questions as best he can. So if you guys, you know, can't get a hold of us or we're taking a little bit too long to answer your question than you would like, you know, go on to the Facebook page and post it there, and Mark or maybe one of our other members can go on there and answer your question for you. So, but yeah, we appreciate all of your work, Mark, and we look forward to seeing more stuff on the Facebook page. And like I said, we're sorry that we've kind of had all this issue with the 8-liners chassis. So, Tim, you got anything else?
No, thank you, Mark. It's good to talk to you again.
All right. Thank you, guys.
Okay. Well, we'll let you go, Mark, and we'll hopefully hear from you soon, and we'll be checking out on the updates on the Facebook page. So,
okay, thanks a lot.
Okay.
See you, Mark.
Okay, Tim, well, that about wraps it up for episode 14 of the podcast. And I do want to just mention a couple of things. I think I mentioned this last podcast, but I do want to mention that we've added the welcome section to the top of the main page there. So if people want to go onto the site, if they're new to the site and they want to find out a little bit about it, there's a welcome section on the main page that they can go to see. It's a great just little thing there. And, of course, we've also mentioned that our Volume 2 DVD will be scheduled for the beginning of August to be released. You should see it on the site soon. We'll also post it on the Facebook page once we get around to it. So you guys will see that announced. If you guys aren't a member of our Facebook page, you know, now is the time to do it. We'll get to that here in a second, though. I'll get the contact information out. Those are the two big announcements, Tim, that we have coming up. And let's go ahead and give out the contact information since I was talking about it. Our email address is questions@arcaderepairtips.com. And again, that's how most of our questions come in. If you have any questions, please send them there and we'll take care of them. All the voicemails that we had from this episode come in on the voicemail line. And that's 972, the number 8, AR-TIPS is an Arcade Repair Tips. Or for those who are spelling challenged on your phone, that's 972-827-8477. So again, call us with your voicemails and, you know, leave us a message and tell us what problems you're having. We're pretty good about calling people back, right, Tim?
Yes.
I mean, we try to be.
We try,
so.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. We can't call you all back, but we'll try to call back as many people as we can. So, and then we also have all of our social media. You can get to us on Twitter at twitter.arcaderepairtips.com. You can get to us on iTunes at itunes.arcaderepairtips.com. And, of course, iTunes is for our podcast page. And if you guys enjoy what you hear, if you enjoy the podcast, we highly recommend that you guys go on there, post a review, and tell the whole world that you enjoy the podcast as well. So that's itunes.arcaderepairtips.com. We also have our YouTube page at youtube.arcaderepairtips.com. A lot of you guys visit that to watch our videos. And, of course, our wonderful Facebook page by community manager Mark Nellis, and that's going to be at facebook.arcaderepairtips.com. Right now, I think we're 75 people strong, Tim, on our Facebook page.
Wow.
So, I mean, if you guys, you know, if guys are looking for collectors in your area, you know, go to our Facebook page. We got 75 people there. Maybe somebody is in your area, so you can check that out.
Yeah, and recommend people on your page that you know collect. Just nothing else. Mark really does a great job. I enjoy reading his posts and stuff and seeing the pictures. You know, that's really cool, always getting pictures of people's games and seeing their love and everything.
And speaking of pictures, I forgot to mention that we do have the contest going on right now to win a free copy of the Volume 2 DVD, you know, send us in a picture of your best before and after restoration of your arcade cabinets. Send them in to community at arcaderepairtips.com. That's Mark's email address. Again, community at arcaderepairtips.com. And if me, Tim, and Mark vote you the best restoration, you're going to get a free copy of our Volume 2 DVD. So, you know.
Signed copy. I'm
signed copy, Tim says. So he's adding that in there.
We'll take care of you.
Yeah, we'll take care of you. So, you know, please send in those pictures. We've already got, I think, 6 or 7 entries. So send in those pictures to community at arcaderepairtips.com, and we'll get you in the contest. So, Tim, is there anything that we need to say before we sign off for tonight?
Now, I just want to thank everybody for – summertime is always a busy time for us, as I'm sure you are. Thank you for your patience and for all the support that we've been getting from you guys. So we really appreciate the shout-outs and the things, the nice things that you guys say. And we're just going to keep working, try to make this a better place for you guys. And by all means, y'all contribute. This is what – if you ever do a repair, shoot a video, something for us, or some pictures that we could post – on the website or the Facebook page, and we really would appreciate that.
Yeah, definitely. So, you know, we appreciate everybody, all the listeners out there, regardless of if you're in the United States or international.
I love the updates, Jonathan. I love it when somebody says, you guys helped me, did this, or I don't know what you guys were talking about. I almost killed myself. At least, you know, maybe we can keep the next person from doing the same, making the same mistakes. But really, we get a lot of good feedback from you guys. We appreciate it.
Right. And so, yeah, thank you guys so much. I mean, obviously, there's no arcade repair tips without you guys, and we thank you so much for that. And I think on that note, we're going to sign off for tonight, Tim. Now, you know, and we hope that you continue to visit our website and all of our different pages. And, you know, remember here at Arcade Repair Tips, when you fix the game, you play the game. Thank you, everybody. Good night.